prepared to come, but we'll go on with the meeting.
The other thing, honourable members, I think I've given to honourable members the program and also to see what is going to happen there. But to honourable members, this program doesn't end up here. It ends up at the provinces. The two joint committees have split. The other committee is going to do KwaZulu-Natal and the Eastern Cape. The other group is going to do the Free State and Gauteng. And next week, jointly, two committees were going to do the Western Cape. And then after the Western Cape, then we split and go to provinces. Because it is a constitutional requirement that we have to test the majority of the people on the bill. Those majority of the people on the bill are sports stakeholders. But one thing that I want to clear quickly from the police committee, portfolio committee, there is no dispensation in this bill that speaks about any other matter which is in the competency of the police bill. The safety at stadium talks about the safety on the road, for an example. I'm sorry. No. So, any cross-reference where an assertion is made about the police, the crafters of the bill and the lawyers on both sides, Parliament and us, and the department, they've made sure that it must not encroach on the activities of the police. But the members who have gone through this, they will tell you that where there is such an overlap, the bill is taken care of. But Gideon is going to explain clearly how that has happened, because there is a view that this is the police bill, or probably when it deals with the safety, and therefore it needs to go to the police. So we want to clarify that, because when cabinet resolved on this matter, it resolved on this matter for sports and recreation as a bill for the safety of the people who go to the stadium, who are at the stadium, who everybody who is there. And this bill, again, General, has been a product of Judge Mwepe. I think you recall. Judge Mwepe was requested to check what are the problems that are really causing the lives of the people at the stadium. You'd remember on the 11th of April 2001, and at Ellis Park, Advocate Majavu would recall. And then on the 16th of January 1991, it was at the Oppenheimer Orkney Stadium, which is called now James Motlatsi. And the other incident happened quickly, recently, yesterday, 2 days ago, between Kaizer Chiefs and Ajax on the 17th. But the problem that we are trying to address here is that people cannot go and vandalize a property from their government, must go and repay it. And that the money and everything has been taken by people who have staged the event, and then we must take responsibility. I think members would recall in the Oppenheimer and the Ellis Park, 43 people died almost on two events, about 86. But there was an outcry. You open up the radio, people are saying, why is government not helping the destitute people? They can't even bury their families. But it's not government who has organized that event. That event was organized by a private company, and they're dealing with that, and therefore, why should it be the responsibility of government? When it has come to the taxi industry, government says that for all these taxis must have what you call the passenger liability. Because if people have died, 15 of them crash in a car, becomes the responsibility of government. It's unfair for taxi people to take money, and the responsibility ends up with government. Then it said, no, let us try to strike the balance. So this bill intends to do that. And we are going to talk very extensively about this field and hear the views of people that are organizing these events. And then that is what this bill, by and large, is intending to address. But the recommendation from Judge Mwembe, when he handed over the report to Parliament, President Mbeki said that the report must translate in government putting mechanism to try to resolve issues of stampede or issues of safety at the stadium. And that has led to this bill. But this bill, General knows and I know that it has been a bill coming for 8 years, but it was not coming. At the time when it lands to the Sports and Recreation Committee, DG was not there. It was a thick document like this. And Parliament said, this is too cumbersome for being a bill. And Gideon was turned back to go and do a better bill for us to be able to manage it and handle it differently. So it is just a coincidence that this bill was referred to this committee by Parliament at this time. It has nothing to do with the FIFA 2010 World Cup. And that it's addressing also issues of safety at stadium post the 2010 World Cup. The event in Newlands was not a 2010 event. It was a simple PSL event. The event in Ellis Park and the event in James McLaren. And the other event, the people were somebody drove to the people who were running in KwaZulu-Natal on the marathon. And 12 people died on that incident. And the organizers of that activity could not even take those people to Lesotho. And some of the people were coming from Lesotho, poor, they could not take those diseased people to Lesotho and all that. Then it had become the responsibility of government. Now we're saying, no. Let's try to see how can we really play a middle way of making sure that people cannot organize events and then there must be standards that have to be met for them to a stage event. They should be simple, a place for the helicopter to land in places like in the Ellis Park, and then cars must not park on the road, and then cars must be checked by the police, the X-rays by the police, because these marshals can't do those kind of things because it is not their competence. So it's clearly giving the standard and also the responsibility of the event to the organizers of the event. That is why it's called the sports and recreational event. If people died in the festival, music festival, it cannot be the responsibility of government. There should be measures that are put in place for the organizers of the festival to make sure that this place can take only 20 people. Don't put in 100 people because there'll be chaos there. If you put in 100 people, and then you must be able to take full account of why did you put 100 people in a place that can only accommodate 20 people. That is what we are trying to do with this thing. So I would like quickly to ask people to introduce themselves. And then on the side that I will quickly introduce the members. In front of the advocate from FIFA or LOC. This is Honorable Donald Lee from the DA. So you must look at these people very clear. This is Honorable Donald Lee from the DA from Port Elizabeth. And that is Honorable Mackenzie, friend of mine from KwaZulu-Natal. And it's a member of COPE. Immediately there is Ntombi Kaise. From the KwaZulu-Natal, a member of the ANC. Next to her is Cora Gihachwi from Western Cape, member of the ANC. Next to him is a general of the Army of South Africa, General Bantubonke Holomisa. He's the leader of the UDM, but I always like to call him general because at least he helped us a lot in the removing that government there. Thank you, General. And next to General there is Mpumza. Mpumza is a researcher for Sports and Recreation Committee. technical issues on this matter, and then if you see them not right, it's Mpumza. Next to Mpumza, we are having our reverend there. My wife likes the reverend, and then because she says reverend can pray, then it's Ndate Mishwe from the Christian ACDV. Ndate Mruzi, can I correct a patio? How you play with Ndate Mruzi? And Ndate Mruzi means a boo morning, but oh, take it and pay. No, I said that the both of you, or not. Oh, that's Reverend Mishwe from ACDP. Thanks, Ndate Mruzi. I can be confused on the video. There's a Mayor Kola Bernard there. I know you. And then from the DA. And next to Mayor Kola Bernard, it's not a very familiar face to me. You see, we're just arriving in Parliament. I don't know many of you.
I'm a new one. My name is Debbie Schaefer. I'm from the DA as well.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Oh, look at DA, so excited. They are in full force today. At the back there, I'll ask people to press there and introduce, because those are visitors. I don't know them. Talk it up, yes.
Busy, researcher, and police.
Since the Wesoma from Sira. Private
security industry regulatory authority. Stephen Barnold from Sira.
Dusi Mboda from Sira.
Benjamin Tuli from Sira.
Benji, next to you there, we have the chair. The chair must come up here. I didn't see you, chair. I see you sneaking in there, come next to me here. So we must be on this side, and then when Donald Lee fires, must start with us. He's in a good mood today. Next to...
Sumaya Sempit is an ACDP researcher.
Sumaya?
Sebastian Peterson.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Next to Sebastian there, ma'am.
I'm Mrs. Lishiva, member of this portfolio committee.
Abongwe, Kobokan SABC. Your party is SABC? Okay. Progressive party, ma'am.
Angie Muliwat from the African National Congress Portfolio Committee Police. Thank you.
Member of this committee.
Grace Seke. Yes. Next to you.
Sister Makaveni from the State Law Advisor.
Good.
Morning, Bernie Peterson, Director General of Sport and Recreation.
This is our DG for Sport and Recreation, Bernie. Colonel Bernard knows him very well because he likes you there at the Correctional Services there. Next to Benny there.
Morning, my name is Bert van der Walt. I'm with the South African Police Service, Legal Services.
Thank you. Next to Bert.
Good morning. My name is Patrick Ronan, and I'm a technical advisor to Sport and Recreation South Africa.
Good morning. My name is Gideon Bosoff. I'm the legal advisor of Sport and Recreation South Africa.
Good morning. My name is Zola Majavu. I am with the Premier Soccer League as its prosecutor, the bad guy, and also I also serve as its legal advisor. And I happen to be fortunate enough to sit in the FIFA tribunal dealing with issues related to sports. Thank you.
Moralo Razunani, Premier Soccer League.
Good morning, Virushka September from Match Event Services, Legal Advisor.
Please, this man is going to introduce himself. I don't want you to cause crisis. I know this man is dividing Parliament. So please introduce yourself properly and just keep quiet. Don't say anything.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and honorable members. My name is Leslie Sidibe. I'm the head of legal for the 2010 FIFA World Cup Organizing Committee. No relationship to another party.
Thank you, Leslie. Next to you.
Good morning. I am Lungi Singami from the Security Division of the 2010 Organizing Committee. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Linda Amte, head of Security 2010 FIFA World Cup.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair. Anna Majavu, Soweto newspaper.
Anna Majavu.
And no relation, I think.
Okay. No, thank you very much. Baba, come. A member, come closer here. Members must get in here. Now I'm sitting down at the corner. Ladies and gentlemen, I think let us. That we've introduced ourselves, although probably we will not keep all the names in our mind, but I think it's fine. And the lady next to me here, it's Comrade Cindy Chikunga. She is the chair of the police in handling this bill jointly with the police, and then she is going to participate in the co-chair with us on this bill, because as I started informing you that this bill, the chair of committees said we must do this bill jointly, so that if there are issues that are very fundamental touching on that portfolio of security, then those matters are not matters that we as Sports and Recreation would be competent about, and then those members from that portfolio committee are best informed on those issues. But in as far as other matters on the safety at stadiums and other related matters, I think we will be in a position to can do that. So everybody is going to participate equally without any hindrance. Now, I'm going to ask quickly, Gideon Boshoff and the three gentlemen, that you quickly take us through, because the committee for, I said, it doesn't work. I don't believe it. I thought that thing is ready. That's why I'm starting. But all the same, would like Gideon and the gentleman to just do a short presentation so that all of us must understand what are you talking about and be able to follow. Because it is not correct for us to move this far, and the committee for the police has not been having a privilege of getting a brief. So we'd like to put the brief back again, and then so that it is informed, and then they'll be comfortable if they can be in a position to follow the events and the whole briefing. We started again. So Gideon, I'm waiting on you. Honourable members, those who have the document in their hands, will wait for this so-called technician who has just left here without testing these things.
So let us go on with the presentation. But the sad part of that, Parliament inefficiency makes us to suffer at the end of the day. Because it's not up to us to wait for these people to do all these other things. They must come and tell them in the morning, and when they are ready, members must walk in here, and then we go on with our work. Not that, again, we must adjourn people and wait for a powerful technician who has not even tested these things. It's not correct. So, members, let us speak on the document that we're having in hand, and then as soon as they're ready on this, and then Gideon will just put it there, and then we can see on the screen. In a document called the overview, it's a document like this one. It's a thick document. Let me see, are people having this document? That's right. That's right. So it seems that nobody doesn't have that document. Gideon, let's start. And Mackenzie, Pori? Give to Ms. Mackenzie and Donald. Donald is going to have it for the second time. And then in general for the first time. And the other members at the back there. Gideon, we're ready. Thank you very much. Lodi.
Thank you very much for offering the department the opportunity, Chairperson, as well as honorable members, to give you a very brief legislative overview. I'm pressed for time, so I will be running through this presentation quite swiftly.
Gideon, let us agree on your presentation. Let it be as casual as possible. Would rather rush other things, but the understanding of what the bill is all about, we can better slow that one a little bit, and then we'll pick up again the pace in others. But for members to understand, I think it's very important.
Thank you very much, Chair. As you can see, Chair, as well as honorable members, the objective of this presentation is to provide you with a strategic overview of the legislative development and implications of the draft bill. Also to provide you with a high-level insight into the reasoning underpinning the draft bill and the proposed legislative criteria relative to safety and security planning and delivery at domestic sports and recreational events. This bill will also introduce a few proposed novel safety and security legislative measures and concepts tailored for South African conditions. It will also provide both chairpersons and honorable members with a high level of, synopsis of the draft bill, which will afford you at a later stage a very good opportunity to really get down to the nitty-gritty of this bill and to interrogate it properly. All over the world, there's a current tendency of operators in the sporting and recreational field. They actually now saying that, you know, operators of sporting and recreational venues worldwide are revising their safety and security risk assessments, operational plans and consequence management arrangements. Now, Mr. Peter Ryan, some of you might recall him. He was the Commander-in-Chief of Safety and Security for the 2000 Sydney Games, as well as the IOC Safety and Security Consultant to the Athens 2004 Olympic Games. With regard to this undertaking or tendency that the operators worldwide are now actually demonstrating, as indicated there, he said the following. He said, they are factoring in the unimaginable. Why are we saying that? It's because I believe this is a daunting task. So you can understand, you know, just in terms of the bill, when you get to the mechanisms of the bill, you will see, you know, all the various aspects and, you know, measures that we've included. But we'll get to that. The reasoning for the bill is as follows. Obviously, it stems from the Ellis Park sock disaster, 2001, 43 of our citizens, young working class citizens, they actually died unnecessarily. Second, the big disaster was the Oppenheimer Stadium Orkney soccer disaster, to which our chairperson has alluded to. On 13 January 1999, you can see it's more or less a period of a decade. 42 citizens killed also unnecessarily on site, 8 later dying in hospital. Obviously, the basis for having this piece of legislation in place is the findings and final recommendations of Justice Bernard Mwepe, flowing on from the Commission of Inquiry to the Ellis Park soccer disaster. Now, we have actually incorporated and made sure that we actually done so. We have incorporated all the findings and recommendations of the Mwepe Commission of Inquiry. Continuing with the reasoning for having this bill in place, the chairpersons and honorable members. South Africa is now becoming a desirous destination for major international sporting, recreational, political, social, economical events, and our government's policy to attract and support the hosting of such events. That's one reason. And then also the hosting by South Africa of major international sports events. For instance, as the chair quite rightly indicated, the 2010, to have this bill promulgated, it's not a prerequisite, you know, to be promulgating the bill prior to 2010. The bill has nothing to do with 2010. Obviously, it will enhance 2010 if it gets promulgated, but it's really not on the cards. There's nothing pushing us to do so. So this is just to cite an example. We say 2010 is a major international sports event, also just around the corner. But then also another reason for having this drafted this bill is lending legislative support to the FIFA safety and security contractual requirements as per 2010 Organizing Association, Host City and Stadium Use Agreements. All I'm saying here is if it gets promulgated prior to 2010, you know, it will give the necessary support in this regard. More reasons are as follows, chairpersons and honorable members. The desire to create an omnibus piece of legislation, a single reference point for easy ease of use by relevant event stakeholders that consolidates and integrates domestic event safety and security requirements. With cross-references related to existing legislation. For instance, in the UK, you have, instead of one piece of legislation, you have 11 pieces of legislation dealing with various fragments and serving the same purpose as we have done now. We have opted going rather for the, you know, to have one piece of legislation in place from which one set of regulations, or maybe two pieces of regulations will stem from. Well, I'm saying that is because the police responsibilities will be covered by way of regulations promulgated by the Minister of Safety and Security, and the sport and recreational segment will then be promulgated by way of regulations by the Minister of Sport and Recreation. So we say now the passing of key safety legislation that is immediately implementable upon promulgation. That's also another reason for having this piece of legislation in place. Again, alignment with worldwide trends to introduce legislation designed to promote safety at public safety at events. Chairpersons, honourable members, we say this piece of legislation is a very reasonable legislation. Unlike the UK, where you have this overreaching and intrusive provisions, I can cite a couple of them, as you can see there, covered intelligence gathering, spectator banning orders prohibiting cross-border travel and sound search and seizure of private residences without notice, compulsory spectator registration. I mean, this is going aboard, and some of them you can clearly see is actually contravening our constitutional rights, is enshrined in terms of our constitution. So what we're saying in the proposed legislation we have adopted now is actually a very reasonable, middle-of-the-road approach, and to incorporate all constitutional safeguards in this respect. Furthermore, we're saying that the draft legislation has enjoyed an extensive consultation process, as the chairperson of the Sport and Recreation Committee has already alluded to. It's been a long... The duration for the drafting of the bill has been a very long haul. The consultation process has also been a very long haul. But then, of course, a positive, if I can call it a positive side effect, is that we have consulted it to such an extent and properly that it actually enhances the content of the bill that is before the committee Now, chairpersons and honourable members, there are current challenges. You can see it's faced by the SAPS, the Emergency Essential Services, and other relevant safety and security stakeholders in respect of when you're hosting a local event. Firstly, the hosting of multiple events in the same area during the same period, you have another what you call resourcing challenges. First and foremost. Secondly, you have a hosting of events prior to proper and sufficient public liability insurance being in place. This is also really a serious omission, and it is really it's more the exception than the rule that you have a case where the event organizers have this particular insurance in place. Also, the failure and resistance of event organizers to accept their responsibility provide adequate security. They say they shrug it off, saying this is the SAPS function. This is the approach that they have. Another challenge is safety and security planning for events is often left at a very late stage. So you need to coordinate with the planning. Failure to consistently apply risk profiling criteria for events. So this has led to a lot of the disasters, as you will see as we go on through the presentation. Also, there has been an inconsistent application of safety and security measures for different events whose risk profile is similar. You need to have consistency, and that's where the legislation comes into force and fulfills a particular role in dictating what you should do and what you should have in place, and to act as a conscience towards role players in this industry. Also, under budgeting by event organizers in respect of public safety and security at events, viewed by some as an unnecessary profit limiting expense. We're actually estimating that event organizers in general is actually only contributing about 10% of the total income generated from the hosting of their particular events for the sake of safety and security of
take places going to that meeting. And you will see later on. You know, the majority of people in South Africa going to events all over South Africa is actually more the young people and the working class. But people are really earning not a very poor salary, as a matter of fact. So you can see that this book aims to create a very positive and sound balance between the expenses or the profits being generated and the offset when it comes to protecting the safety and security of spectators and participants in particular sports games. Just to cite an example. And then other current challenges is no safety certification for stadiums, venues, or temporary structures at stadiums, venues, or events are in place. You don't have anything to that effect. Use of unregistered, inexperienced, and untrained persons to provide a security service as provided for the private security industry. Silo planning by safety and security role players at events. You can see again, the whole ensures that there's a main thrust to be followed. Spearheading a lot of the role players to get them to follow what is a reasonable legislation. That's what we're saying. Then also there's insufficient safety and security resourcing at events. I've already alluded to that in my one example. A focus on reactive rather than proactive safety and security measures at events. No punitive measures for failure. That's a serious omission. I mean, people, one can rephrase it like this. People get away with murder. Then ongoing challenges. Self-regulation definitely has, by controlling bodies. Never ever worked. For instance, just to cite a couple of examples, you will see the latter one being a new example. The PSL League in 2006, there was at FNB Stadium, there was a mass destruction of property, 1,000 spectator seats set alight. Coca-Cola, massive mix concert, Super Sport Park, 2007, recently, mass spectator dehydration, evolving treatment on hospitalization. Rugby, semi-final Curry Cup, Loftus, public violence, and destruction of property. Alcohol-related, one of the big culprits is alcohol, because emotions people get very irrational, very emotional, and very aggressive. So we're saying also another, just to cite a good example, you can see clearly, it's not only sport, it's not only, for instance, religious gatherings, it's not only, for instance, musical concerts, it's also even the King of the Mountain Hill Climb Racing, Cirrus, 2008, one person dead, seven seriously injured because the driver lost control of his car. The PSL League match, this is important, this is what our chairperson has also alluded to this morning. This is really important because over the weekend, Kaizer Chiefs and Ajax, the MTN Super 8, that was on Saturday, Newland Stadium, mass public violence, throwing of missiles onto the pitch, bottle throwing, intimidation of a match official. They were actually crouching the poor ref right in the middle. And really, you know, this is a very threatening and it's like victimization. An intentional damage of 500 seats. Now, and it's been shown over the TV and in the newspapers. And we must eradicate this type of, this type of monster that we're trying to create.
With the greatest humility. See you. All of us, we members of parliament, we are these people who follow all the clubs. But you're touching on another member's club when you talk about this hooligan from Kaizer Chiefs. Please. as long as the meeting is not going to be in disarray, you can say whatever you want to say. But I'm afraid somebody will topple this committee. But just be careful.
Okay.
Uh,
Furthermore, I need to take you, unfortunately, now to a couple of slides. It's actually quite horrific because it has a reference on the specific disasters. Oppenheimer Stadium, Alkmaar. This is how, you know, the stadium looked like, the aftermath. You can see this is January 1991. 35 spectators attended that particular match. Yeah, 35, sorry, yeah, spectators. There was a stampede. 180 injured, 42 dead. Again, poor safety and security planning contributed to the disaster. And it's part. The pictures tell the whole story there. Dallas Park, 43 citizens dead, mostly young, mostly working class. Dallas Park, again. Ghana, see, we're still focusing on Africa, and this is 130 dead. Spectator crash again, tear gassing, rioting. Abidjan, 22 dead, spectator crash, tear gassing, rioting. Again, Abidjan, Hillsborough. So those of you who are old enough, you will actually perhaps recall Hillsborough. And 96 dead. This is now Europe, England. More of Hillsborough. Eiffel, Belgium, 39 dead. Soccer's Day of Shame. This is the low road. We are talking about the road, low road here. We want to go the high road. 39 dead. I saw again. 85. Then we prepared a short schedule for you. I'm not going right into the detail. But you can see it's not only related just to sport at the stadiums. It can be also concerts at stadiums or other venues or religious gatherings. You can see the different statistics, you know, involved relative to those particular groupings that I've just mentioned. But I don't have the time to really go through that. Schedule of major sports disasters. This is pre 1988. 1955, you can see again, Le Mans, France, racing car hotels, the spectator grandstand, 82 dead. 1964, soccer riot, Peru, Argentinian spectators, 300 dead, 500 injured. Glasgow, spectator crash, soccer match, 66 dead. Now, this one is also very important because it is extraordinary. 1972. Now you will recall there was actually a movie in the cinema Nouveau with a name, I think Munich. And in 1972, the Olympic Games, 11 Israeli athletes, one policeman, and five Arab guerrillas were killed. 1980, Colombia structural collapse. So you see the impact is also visible. Is also trying to protect things from this happening. 1982, Moscow, Russia, spectator crash due to police negligence, 340 dead. 85, England, soccer stadium set alight in a main grandstand. Now we're coming to the nitty-gritty of this piece of legislation, honorable chairs and honorable members. The Commission of Inquiry into the Ellis Park soccer disaster. Obviously, it has an impact on safety and security, the disaster, and also on sport and recreation. Perhaps more so safety and security. Percentage-wise, one might argue 60-40. But we try to create a balance. We don't want to strike a balance, as our chairperson of the portfolio committee has quite rightly indicated. We want to strike a balance when it comes to safety and security at sports and recreational events at stadiums and other venues. The findings of the commission were as follows. Enforcement of safety and security must be in the hands of professional people. Now remember, you can actually say that whatever you see here was a real shortcoming when it comes to Ellis Park. Improved fixture scheduling. Event fixtures must be categorized according to clearly defined risk profile criteria.
proper timeliness and proactive safety and security contingency operational plan. Expert certification of safe capacities of stadiums. That is also very important. Safety certification of stadiums and venues. Proper traffic management around those stadiums. Installation of proper robust outer perimeter physical measures. Orderly, secure channeling and queuing of spectators. Effective, secure, and centrally administered match event ticketing design. Prevention of crowd congestion at spectator entry points. Communication of essential disaster management information of spectators. Establishment of a venue operation center, what we call commonly referred to as the box, at all stadiums and venues manned by a senior experienced safety and security representative. Proper control monitoring procedures must be in place. CCTV surveillance. More on the findings, chairpersons and honorable members, are as follows. Pre-sales of match event tickets only through secure centrally controlled system with nationwide 24 outlets. Adequate public address systems, both inside and outside. The maintenance and keeping of proper records by safety and security role players. Implementation of restrict items schedules for stadium venues. Proper alcohol control, I've already touched on that. The establishment of safety committees headed by the National Safety Officers. State Security Services, the SAFs, must be present at all PSL matches. This was specifically addressed to the PSL. Specialized SAFs units must be present at high-risk events. SAFs must appoint senior and national safety and security officer to oversee national security of high-risk events. Implementation of proper invasive, non-invasive spectator search procedures. Stadiums, events by SAPS, registered security officers, properly trained for this purpose. The SAPS national safety and security officer must be authorized to postpone or delay stop games and events in certain circumstances where you have a crisis. Proper protocols for the stadium or venue public address announcements must be in place. Safety and security education of spectators as well. Efficient and committed event management which puts the broader sport and recreational interests above their own good heavy emphasis on safety and security and convenience of spectators. Now the structure of the bill, I'm not going to delve too long here, just to ensure that this is the focus, to ensure the proper planning, resourcing, provision of internationally benchmark risk management with regard to safety and security at all public and sports and recreational events in South Africa. Now, coming to the definitions, I would like to also just to refresh the meeting, all of you who actually participated during our first meeting of this regard. You will recall that the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Sport and Recreation has stated that some of the definitions are actually, they need some more convention, I think you actually referred to. But the fact of the matter is it needs to be beefed up because you will see some of the definitions does not pronounce on exactly what the word actually describes, defines. Defines means you need to create finer points which then amalgamates and produces the result of the meaning of the word. So we will look into that, and we will definitely follow the middle of the road with the state law advisors here, but we will definitely address that. First, you have the definition of event, means a sporting and entertainment, recreational, or similar activities hosted at a stadium, venue, or along a route or within the respective precincts. You will see, obviously, religious gatherings will fall under this particular. There's no specific reference to religion, but it will fall under this particular definition. Event organizer then also means any person who plans, who is in charge, manages, supervises, or holds an event or sponsorships rights to an event, or in any manner controls or has a material interest in the hosting of the event. Stadium owner is likewise a person who owns, manages,
managers or is entitled to exercise the rights of an owner or occupier of a stadium used for events. Any owner is a similar definition. Controlling body, this is a very important definition. You'll find that it's actually, it's speaking and talking to the definition of a national federation in terms of the National Sport and Recreation Act, but we have actually elaborated on that by saying now, the controlling body means the national federation as defined in Section 1 of the National Sport and Recreation Act, or an international controlling body governing a code of sport or recreational activity in the Republic, but excludes the National Department of Sport and the Sports Confederation, contemplating the terms of Section 1 of the National Sport and Recreation Act. Now, our chairperson has also made a very valid point. He was of the opinion that the National Department of Sport and Recreation should be omitted from this definition. It should only have a reflective onus on a national federation as defined in terms of the NSR Act, as well as the Sports Confederation. So we're also working on that. Event Safety and Security Planning Committee. This is also, you see, this committee is very important. You will, to my mind, it fulfills a pivotal role when it comes to ensuring the execution of, you know, measures and the control mechanisms, and also to, they are actually spearheading the role that bodies must play and ensure compliance. They will, for instance, also draft a written event safety and security plan to which all the bodies role players must conform to. It means the committee contemplating Section 16 of the Act, which is a committee established by the authorized SAPS member consisting of a minimum of 12 safety and security stakeholders. Key concepts in this particular bill is legislation will not apply to exempted private events. Private events, obviously, we entail definitely not political gatherings. We're saying it should be maybe weddings or funerals, just to cite two examples. Obviously, you will have an application which you have to deal with on merit, but it will have to be properly motivated, and the Minister of Sport and Recreation will then, on the basis of the application, decide whether this is an event, a private event, to be exempted or not.
Just a person, what about political parties who hold rallies and have concerts and all these pop stars, you know? Especially this the big party in this country. What do we do on that?
No, General, if as soon as that political party says that it's going to have a festival, then, no. If it is a rally, it's a political gathering controlled by the Police Act, they must go and get a permission and be granted and all that, which has at least falls out of this competence. But in any event, they are organizing a gig. It's a recreation, and therefore they are subjected to this. And they end up with a gig. No. We talk about that. But it is linked to a political religion. I don't mean it. Okay, go on.
Okay, a very important key concept is also the joint and several responsibility of controlling bodies, event organizers, and stadium of any owners. Because everybody's been passing the buck. When things go wrong, they say, no, it's not my responsibility. Now we've created a joint and several responsibility when things go wrong. So you must ensure, because see, this permutation where you see both controlling bodies, event organizers, stadium of any owners, you find many times in the bill there's this particular grouping being grouped together, and they will face the responsibility together and jointly and severally as well. Annual risk categorization and designation of events is also one of the key concepts contained in this draft bill. Application of varying levels of safety and security measures at events dependent on the levels of identified risk. You either get a high, a medium, or a low risk categorization of an event, depending on factors which we'll come to later.
Safety certification and grading of stadiums, obviously that's also a key concept, because it needs to, you need to, as an event organizer, for instance, apply for a safety certification, and then also grading of the stadium will be done by the local authorities in this regard. Compulsory public liability insurance of events, we've already alluded to that. Then the phasing in periods for compliance by existing stadiums or venues. This is very important because many people have actually expressed the concerns that this bill is going to flabbergast us. You know, it's so many requirements, and they're going to have regulations and so forth. And so we decided, you know, we're going to create a phasing in period. Firstly, 2 years in the case of a high risk event, 3 years in the case of a medium risk event. And then, thirdly, low risk events. You'll have 5 years after the commencement of this particular TV legislation to comply with all the requirements as set out in this bill, which has been an Act of Parliament, as well as its regulations. More key concepts: identification of safety and security role players at events. Establishment of event safety and security planning committees, as I say, they fulfill a very important role. Assignment of duties and responsibilities to event safety and security role players. Prohibition of events due to safety and security risks. We'll come to that later. Exclusion of spectators from events. We'll come to that later. Creation of offences, penalties. You will see what our chairperson has also indicated, that an imprisonment of 10 years is not sufficient. It should rather be at least 20 years. And we are also looking into that because of, you know, of the involvement of so many role players, and it might have a rippling effect when one does something wrong. And the fact that the one actually was the furthest, was actually, how would I put it, is actually not so closely related to the particular omission being done. That rippling effect can, of course, eventually that the person dies. So you should include a far-reaching, penalties in this regard. That's all I'm trying to say. Scope of the bill: to determine, maintain, and ensure the physical safety and security of all persons, participants, and members of the public and their property present at the sporting recreational events. The application of the bill: the bill prevails where there may be conflict with other existing general legislation. The bill, however, does not apply to gatherings as per the regulation of the Gatherings Act. We make it very clear distinguish in that regard. And then the bill, at the moment, it says the bill does not apply to any form of water sport. But after our first meeting with the committee, our chairperson has also made an indication that we should rather consider perhaps to be very consistent. We need to actually delete this particular provision, or we should actually state specifically that it will be affected by the provisions of law. Because why? You will have, for instance, cow boating. It can be a very dangerous sport. I think when this was actually tabled to, when it was submitted to cabinet, I think the idea was, in retrospect, the chairperson, is that perhaps they thought this is like, you know, water sport being a very leisurely activity, recreational activity, and so forth. You know, but to our mind, over the past couple of years, you see in the newspapers a lot of incidences happening even there in the water. You know, people being injured and so forth.
No, you see, we cannot. You're right. We cannot gamble on that one. If in the water sport competition, people drown there, you call the police, you do everything. When you look at the what they were using to play there, it's something that you cannot imagine. It's a risk for their life. So you can't just leave the water sport. We're very clear about that one, and then we are emphasizing that the water sport must be included.
Responsibility of safety and security at events. You will see the primary responsibility to ensure that proper event safety and security measures are in place, rest jointly and severally as indicated, on the controlling body, event organizer, stadium, and venue owner. And then also these persons or bodies must cooperate with and assist the SAPS in respect of the performance of the SAPS duties at events where and wherever needed. The National Commissioner must establish an event safety security planning committees for events and appoint also VOC commanders where authorized issue spectator exclusion notices. National Commissioner may also, amongst others, direct the person to implement additional safety and security measures for an event, prohibit the sale of event tickets on the day of an event, stipulate conditions for the hosting of a high-risk event. You will see also, I just want to drive this point, chairpersons, is that you'll have varying conditions when it comes to high-risk events. It's not like a pro forma being issued. It will depend on, you know, various factors which the National Commissioner will consider. So I just want to make that point as well. Then also the National Commissioner may prohibit and restrict the admission of certain persons to an event because they might be unruly, they might actually cause damage to a property and so on. We'll come to that later. And they also issue spectator exclusion notices and amend and replace safety certificate. Responsibilities of these role players at events are as follows. The controlling body, event organizers, and stadium venue owners must, among others, appoint sufficient persons responsible for safety and security, inclusive of the following: private security officers, stewards, event safety officers, to implement reasonable safety and security measures for an event. At the previous meeting, we also alluded to the terminology of marshals and so forth. So we're also investigating that. We would like to follow the international trend in that regard and with regard to the stewards here as relative to the marshals. We'll interrogate that. We're busy doing that. And then also the controlling bodies, the event organizers, the stadium venue owner may appoint volunteers to assist with safety and security functions, but very importantly, they may not fulfill the role of a security officer, chairpersons, and honorable members. More responsibilities of the safety and security role players. An event organizer must, if a natural person, be at least 18 years of age and have the necessary capacity, resources, and experience to organize an event. Now, this is also a very important provision, to my mind. Prohibitions, it says. Now, this is a threefold ministry, if I may say so, because if you want to become an event organizer, you will have to comply, first and foremost, to this particular three. You need to overcome these prohibitions. First prohibition: no person may organize an event unless that person has submitted an annual schedule of events for provisional risk categorization to the National Commission of Police. We'll come to that a little bit later. And also, no person may organize an event unless he or she has insured that public liability insurance for that event is in place. That's also important, and quite rightly as indicated by Mr. McKenzie, or the Honorable Mr. McKenzie here, when you apply for such insurance, should be valid insurance, what we call valid insurance. It should be a registered insurance broker in this regard. That's a very good point. And we're also interrogating that, and we'll also redraft that particular provision. No person may, then, on the flip side of this particular provision, no person may obtain event tickets or resell or use for commercial purposes or directly or indirectly sell or promote event tickets without the prior permission of event organizers. I know that Match being here, they have a big problem in this regard. You know, unauthorized selling of tickets already taken place. And even the DTI tried to, you know, to draft the regulations in this regard, but they were unsuccessful. And the only, safe to say now, the only conduit left to be utilized, in other words, to prohibit the unauthorized selling of tickets or promotion thereof, will be, in other words, your safety bill or your safety regulations. But as we've already stated, you know, we are of the view, as with the committee, that the
committees that the there's no prerequisite to, in other words, to promulgate this particular piece of legislation prior to 2010, because there's no relationship, unfortunately, there. So we need to, we're actually busy interrogating using other means or vehicles to achieve the same purpose, to assist, in other words, the match people there. Categorization of sports and recreational events. Now, you'll see there's an annual submission in advance by controlling bodies, event organizers, and stadium venue owners of the written schedule containing the relevant information regarding a planned event to be hosted at a stadium or venue to the National Commissioner for Provisional Risk Categorization. So he's actually the first hurdle to cross. You have to apply to him, and then he will then consider and assess whether your submission for the purposes of the allocation of the risk profile is either a high, a medium, or a low risk event in terms of your scheduled events. The National Commission then gives notice to the Minister of Sport and Recreation and the relevant local authority, as well as the event organizer of the provisional risk categorization of the event. The Minister then considers the provisional risk categorization. Now, I know that our Minister, Chairperson, is actually of the view, and it's actually a good forum to advise you with regard to this, and that you... Safety and security is not the field of our minister. We are of the view that this function should rather be the function of the minister of safety and security, because our minister doesn't have the expertise in his department to actually analyze, evaluate, and make a judgment in this regard. So our proposal to both committees here will be to reconsider, the way it has been drafted, because the way it has been drafted, it is actually stating that our Minister of Sport and Recreation, makes the decision in this regard when it comes to a final categorization of the particular event. The bill provides for an administrative mechanism to be followed by an event organizer in the event that they do not agree with the decision. It's like a mini type of administrative justice act enshrined in our constitution, same provisions that can be followed there. Risk profiling of events. This is very important also because, the risk profile will be determined in terms of 21 risk profiling criteria. Now, this, you can clearly see, latches onto the Ellis Park soccer disaster. Historic data, popularity of event, relevance of the outcome of the event, venue location and expected attendance based on historic current factors, suitability of the stadium venue from a safety and security perspective, certified safe capacity of a stadium or venue, very important, crime statistical trends at a stadium venue, historical incidents at prior similar events. The day of the week, time of the day, the event is to be hosted. You will recall that the Ellis Park soccer disaster was on a Tuesday, just after work. That's one of the major contributors when it comes to that particular disaster, apart from the other risks. Sport event factors, rivalry of teams, historic fan behavior, historic medical safety and security data relating to an event, age profile of attendees to an event, international, domestic, and local socioeconomic, political, security-related factors. The expected weather even, or other natural conditions in the lead-up during this particular event. Honorable chairs and honorable members, now we get to safety certificates. The bill provides for the application and issuing of the following categories of safety certificates. The local authority will issue the following safety certificates. A general safety certificate for existing stadiums or venues. A safety certificate for new stadiums and venues. A safety certificate for planned alterations and extensions to existing stadiums. And then also the grading certificate. Now, the grading certificate you must distinguish from the categorization of an event as a high, medium, or a low risk profile. The grading certificate to be issued by the local authority has a bearing on the hosting capability of that particular stadium or the venue, whilst the categorization of events, that risk profile clings to the event itself, whilst the grading comes to the stadium or venue where it's going to be accommodated, that particular event. So there's a grading of the stadium and venue. The international commissioner, he will only issue one certificate, and that is the high-risk event safety certificate. Then we come to existing stadium or venue safety certificates. Provision has been made for administrative processes in respect of the annual application to local authorities on the issuing of safety certificates for existing stadiums or venues by the stadium venue owners. Importantly, as I've already referred to, the bill provides for a phasing-in period in respect of stadium and venues to comply with all the technical provisions of the bill. 2, 3, 5 years. You recall I said 2 years for a high risk, 3 years for a medium risk, and 5 years for a low risk event. The certificate for existing stadium must be accompanied, importantly, by a separate grading certificate issued by the local authority, which determines the safe spectator capacity of the stadium, as well as the level of event risk, low, medium, or high, may be hosted at that particular stadium. New stadium venue design safety certificates. Now, this particular provision provides for the administrative process in respect of the annual application to local authorities and the issuing of safety certificates for brand stadium venues by stadium venue owners. Stadium venue owner must comply with the following. Importantly, the local authority safety and security requirement conditions are set out in their certificate. That will also vary from certificate to certificate, I believe. An applicable national and local authority building legislation and SABS building design guidelines. Applicable stadium venue technical requirements of the international controlling bodies, FIFA, for instance. Applicable national, provincial, local medical facility requirements and other prescriptions that describe criteria. Certificates for alterations and extensions to stadiums and venues. Chairpersons and honorable members, this provision provides for the administrative process for intended alterations and extensions to existing stadiums and venues. Local authorities will take the following into account. The certified safe capacity of the stadium venue, safety, seating design of the stadium venue, spectator turnstiles at a stadium, emergency access, egress, routes, gates inside the stadium venue, physical spectator barricading, traffic management planning inside and around the stadium venue, whether the proposed alteration will affect importantly the safety and security of persons in that particular stadium or venue. I was the event safety certificate. Now remember, the national commissioner is the person who's going to issue this, and he provides for this administrative process. And also, you will see that it can be also issued by the Minister of Sport and Recreation. The issuing of the, I don't make it more pointly, the issuing of the certificate is done by the National Commissioner, but the categorization of that of the event is done by the Minister of Sport and Recreation, which we've already indicated it should rather be the Minister of Safety and Security. The issuing of a high-risk event safety certificate by the National Commission may be subject to compliance with certain conditions. I told you that, you know, it will vary from certificate to certificate and event to event. Contents and amendments of safety certificates. It provides for also administrative mechanisms when it comes to local authorities, and those it has a bearing on low or medium risk stadiums when a local authority issues those amendment certificates. When it comes to high-risk events, it can only be done, chairpersons and honorable members, by the National Commissioner. So it actually is actually self-explanatory, because the level of risk will determine that the same person who has initially been involved with the process will eventually then also, you know, do the amendment, the proposed amendment. Conditions regarding the contents and amendments of safety certificates may be prescribed. Inspectors. The enforcement is actually done by inspectors, and we thought, you know, it's in the best practice to use existing infrastructure to restrict. It will actually restrict the financial burden when it comes to the utilization of inspectors, because they are already having people in place who can actually fulfill that role. So in that way, you know, it will serve a very good purpose. Now, the powers of the inspectors are actually tempered insofar as the constitutional safeguards are concerned. Inspections are only limited, for instance, to business premises, not to private premises. So it's enshrining our actually constitutional mandate. Local authorities must also issue certificates of appointment to inspectors. Inspectors may be accompanied by the SAPS member or any other person reasonably required to assist in this regard, which is the inspection. All persons present at the inspection must furnish assistance corporations to an inspector or a police official performing the assistant role. Bill provides also for stringent qualification criteria regarding the appointment of inspectors, especially the important is to appoint good, solid people with a very solid track record, experience, integrity, impartiality. We emphasize on those, especially those three components, because it's so important that you have the right people in place. Private events, we have already alluded to that. Minister, after consultation with the National Film Commissioner, so the Minister will have to consult, but the final decision rests with him. They issue a notice in the Government Gazette. The exempt certain events as private events, and they will not be affected by the operation of the book. Event safety and security, basically, I've already told you that this is the main thrust of activities are being overseen by them, and you will see also, I think, in terms of our legislation, they're more or less in the middle of the piece of legislation as well. The National Commissioner must appoint the SAPS official as an authorized member to establish the Event Safety and Security Planning Committee. I'm just commonly going to refer to it as the ESSPC. For each event to be categorized as a medium or high risk event. In other words, for a low risk event, where's the school event? School events, mostly, in most cases, it will those games, irrespective of what sport being played at that, those particular stadiums or at a venue, will be regarded as low risk events. Obviously, remember those risk factors, the rivalry and so forth, that can, or previous fighting that actually, you know, were initiated at previous games, for instance, that might have also a bearing on the classification or categorization of that particular low-risk event. It should have been a low-risk event, a school game, to be elevated to either a medium risk or even a high risk.
Gideon, you're not doing very bad, but you're left with 15 minutes.
Thank you. The authorized member, as you see, he appoints the members of the committee and manages and coordinates the powers and duties of the committee, directs the measures relating to the safety and security at an event. We're still continuing with their particular functions and their actually composition. The committee consists of the following persons to be appointed and authorized by the following components: National Commissioner, authorized member, local disaster management, controlling body, stadium, venue owner, event organizer, emergency service provider, health and medical service provider, state security services, provincial health, private security service provider, volunteer representative, where applicable, any other person deemed necessary by the SAPS member, authorized member. Then the functions of the Event Safety and Security Planning Committees are as follows. They will consider categorizations of an event, and where appropriate, due to this is very important, I want to stress this for the sake of the committee. Due to changed circumstances, they can actually make written recommendations to the National Commissioner or to the Minister of Sport and Recreation at this point in time, as we discussed, for a reclassification of the risk. If circumstances have changed and they are of the view that, say, for instance, a medium, an event that has been classified or categorized rather as a medium risk should rather be a high risk, they can make those recommendations. They will not do it by themselves. Only the National Commissioner or the Minister of Sport and Recreation at this point in time will all be able to do that. Then also they will prepare a written event safety and security plan. This is very important because this takes all road players along and tell them what they should do and what they must have in place, chairpersons and honorable members. So it's very important to have that plan, and that plan must be adhered to all road players insofar as this particular piece of legislation is concerned. The assignment of specific tasks to the role players, for instance, will relate to the following: safety measures, medical, security, deployment of SAPS members, deployment of private security service providers, emergency and essential service providers with VOC. Also, they will determine with regard to specific event measures related to spectator vehicle access. I can go on, you know, I should hasten myself, so I'm not actually going to do that, but alcohol control, you can see the tobacco control, volunteers, spectator exclusion notices, we'll come to that later, prohibition notices. And they will also demarcate any site area for restricted entry by way of accreditation card and event ticket only. For any zone surrounding or adjacent to the stadium or venue, they can demarcate as an exclusion zone where only event organizer authorized commercial activities can take place. Now, you will see this part has actually been, to a great extent, we actually make use of the word lifted from the 2010 FIFA World Cup special measures legislation. And we've actually, because remember, 2010 legislation will expire after 2010. So we would like to create a legacy. And in that way, we've actually decided, you know, to honor that and then slot it in here. And the ESSPC will also advise any controlling body, event organizer, or stadium or venue owner to take such steps as may be required for the safeguarding of a stadium or venue. Just a couple of examples. I know, you know, it's tough to listen to a long, winding type of presentation now. Examples of security measures. That looks like example of more. Venue operations center, VOX. This is the nerve center of any proper safety and security delivery at an event. Draft bill provides for the establishment of this VOX. It can either be permanent or, you know, temporary. The VOC has the responsibility for the establishment of this VOC is, in the case of a stadium or venue, it will be the stadium or venue owner. In the case of a event along a route, it will be the event organizer. Event along a route is like, for instance, the August, Comrades, Marathon. The ESSPC may approve VOC exemptions. For low-risk events, there's no need for a VOC. It's only for medium and high-risk events, but it can still even be exempted in certain circumstances, depending on the motivations and depending on the criteria being involved. The SAPS authorized member must determine which role players or their respective representatives must staff the VOC. There were a couple of role players there for the VOC. I'm not going into that. You can see it's representatives of all spheres involved in the process of safety and security at particular events. This just goes on. The VOC commander should be a very experienced staff officer, at least of the rank of captain, and he must ensure that the proper written VOC plan, you have, in other words, two vital plans in terms of this particular piece of legislation. This is the proper written VOC plan must be in place for each and every event. Then also, you will recall that I refer to the Event Safety Security Planning Committee that must provide or draft a event safety and security plan for an event as well. So that's the second plan in terms of this particular legislation. The said high-risk event plan, you will also see that there's a plan for a high-risk event needs to be approved by the National Commissioner. The high-risk event plan is then distributed to all of the VOC role players and staffing for that event. This is what a VOC looks like inside. I think this was at the stadium. No. Units. Then we have accreditation access to designated areas. This has also been captured from the 2010 special measures legislation. So I'm not going to delve a long time here, but it's safe to say, you know, you need to reduce risk. You need to accredit your role players or persons which will allow access to certain areas in order to have control and to manage your risk properly. So that's the reason why, in short, we want to accredit those particular role players
I'm not going into the final detail because I need to hasten now. Accreditation again measures applicable to designated areas. Again, this stems from the 2010 legislation, so to a great extent. I'm not saying all and sundry, but to a great extent. Event ticketing, obviously, this is very important. Persons may be required to purchase a ticket for an event. It's not always that you're going to have people required to pay for an event. Access may only be gained by showing a valid ticket. Total tickets sold for an event may not exceed the certified safe capacity of a stadium. So that was happened there at Ellis Park. A lot of people were gaining access at a really late stage in a very uncontrolled manner without tickets and so forth. Ticket sales at a stadium may be prohibited on the day of the event, not closer than 1 kilometer from a stadium or venue. Ticket touting is totally prohibited in terms of the legislation. Spectator vehicle access, again, this actually stems from the great extent from the 2010 Special Measures Act. And I'm not going to delve into that. Exclusion notices. You will see that there are certain instances where a spectator or a group of spectators is actually creating a nuisance of, and for instance, it's causing disruption and injury to another person at the particular event. And so we're saying, you know, you would recall the photos here of Mr. Piet van Sail, alias Peter John Smith. That's his real name, apparently. And he tackled the ref here during one of the Springboks game. I'm not sure which game it was. Springboks against one of our enemies, All Blacks. And this is a national embarrassment. That's, you know, this is a really the ugly face, as we say, of rugby spectator hooliganism. Because look at the embarrassment. We believe that we've heard that people are actually still talking when it comes to this incident. Only last year, people were actually, still discussing the impact and the disgrace involved in this. This is an unprecedented attack of the International Rugby Test official by a spectator. Now, event safety and security measures, the ESSP, C, after taking into consideration the risk categorization of an event, must ensure that prescribed measures relating to safety, health, medical services, security, deployment of safety and security for service providers, emergency and essential services are in place for a particular event. Deployment of state security services, the National Commission authorized must, relative to the risk of the event, ensure that the necessary state security measures and deployments are in place for an event. Now, if a number of events are hosted on the same day in a specific area, chairpersons and honorable members, and the authorized SAPS member has a reason to believe that the police will not be able to provide adequate policing on that particular day at that specific event. The said SAPS member now, he may notify the relevant controlling body, event organizer, stadium, or any other as the case may be, to take such reasonable steps, including whatever, to mitigate and to possibly lack of adequate policing to ensure the protection of persons and property at that particular event. Those reasonable steps may be taken. Appeals and appeal board. We've discussed it at the previous round with our chairperson and the committee, and also our chairperson has also indicated that, you know, we haven't provided for a quorum when it comes to the appeal board, and we're actually redrafting this particular provision, inserting it, and then also our chairperson has also said that, you know, the appointment is of these members of the appeal board is for two years. And then he said, with regard to the legal appointment of a legal person, it's reflected in the bill that such an appointment is for the person should have experience of at least 3 years. Chairperson has indicated change over these 2 years. So we've taken note of that point as well. And then obviously we will revisit this particular clause as well. So you can see there's the administrative law procedure processes that follow. You can actually appeal against any decision being taken in terms of this particular piece of legislation. Just despite a few risk categorization of event, issuing of any category of safety certificate, administrative amendments to risk categorizations, etc., issuing of prohibition notices,
spectator exclusion notice, prohibition notices. This is quite an example. This is the act of terror would be a good example here, or where there's a structural collapse would be a very good example where one of the following decision makers will play a role: the National Commissioner or his authorized member. Likewise, also the Event Safety Security Planning Committee and the VOC Commander. Now, they can take these decisions with regard to issue a prohibition notice where there's a serious risk to spectators. Practical examples: unsafe temporary grant sale, ticket selling irregularities, power outages, state intelligence information with regard to planned disruption, act of terror, for instance. We also made provision for appeals to the High Court in this particular instance. I need to hasten now, and I'm reaching the conclusion stages of my presentation, Chairperson. Public liability insurance, the controlling body, event organizer, or stadium or venue owner are jointly and severally responsible to ensure that sufficient public liability insurance cover in place. We said valid, it should be the registered insurance company as well. You know, it has to register in terms of the laws regulating that. Fees, obviously there were fees, draft fees with the raising of fees. You have fees with regard to the issuing of certificates for, safety certificates for stadiums, whether it's planned or existing and so forth, or grading even, you'll have fees associated with that. Offences penalties, we've spoken about 10 years, it shouldn't be 10 years, it should rather be 20 years, we'll have to look at that. And the fine or imprisonment, the following aspects, you can see clearly is entering where you enter into the designated area without prior authorization, for instance, will create an offense. Doubting unauthorized event ticketing promotions, breaching of event ticket conditions, contravention of state exclusion notices, contravention of prohibition notices, failure to put public liability insurance in place. Just to cite a few, go on and on there. But time, and I would like to thank you all for allowing us to do this presentation. And any questions you would like to ask, we will try to our utmost best to try to accommodate your concerns. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Christian. I think I'll introduce them. Cindy Chikung, I'm chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Police. We will take clarity seeking questions from members, and of course, Mr. Gideon will take note of those and will respond probably with his team. So if there are clarity-seeking questions, we will take those. Members will indicate by raising their hands. Okay, it will be yourself, says number one. Honorable Olumisa, Honorable Tefa, you say there will be the last one in that order. Let's take questions then.
Thanks, Chairperson. Ian, thanks very much for the presentation. Just two questions. on the question of these applications being onerous to the people who apply, for example, how long is it going to take to get one of these permits approved for a particular event? Is it going to be a long bureaucratic process? It seems to me that you have something like 19 or 20 different people in that body who will make that final decision. So clearly there needs to be some lead time. That is the first question. Second thing is, without getting into too much detail, the physical perimeter of the stadiums. I noticed in some of the documentation that you're talking perhaps of a 3-meter fence. Is that necessary in a categorized area which might be low or medium risk category? Because that could be a huge amount of onerous financial burden on an event owner or facility owner. Thank you.
Chairperson, honorable members, and our visitors. If we had a first world infrastructure in this country, I would submit that this legislation would succeed. But in a country like ours, where the playing field is not level, I have doubt if this would ever be effective, this legislation. Just to cite one example, for instance, we still have SMEs in this country who have been surviving out of these weekend soccer matches. And for instance, now in this 2010 event, when you look at the accreditation, subject to correction, but I don't think those mamas who come and carry their card boxes to prepare food in order to make a living will be accredited inside the perimeter, the boundary. If that is not the case, does this legislation talk to the safety of those people outside, including the insurance, outside the designated area? Lastly, I see in the documentation that FIFA is objecting. We would like you also to brief us on whether what they are objecting is reasonable. This committee is about to go and visit provinces. I would like to ask the Portfolio Committee of Sports, in particular, to go and visit the FIFA stadium or whatever in Port Elizabeth, and check on the quality of the stadium. Look at the suites which have been built there. It's like you are entering a storeroom. Small things. And also you look at the access to the stadium itself. And ask yourself, if you were to have a disaster, how would you manage a disaster in that particular stadium? What is that? I think I should, for now, stop there. Thank you.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Three issues. Firstly, on the issue of safety certificates for planned alterations. You say that they have to have a safety certificate for a new stadium and for planned alterations. So what about once the alterations are complete? Surely they should then do a separate inspection. They should then issue another safety certificate once that is complete. Because, I mean, they might have the alterations planned, but then they don't do them in accordance with the plan. Secondly, you say that the constitutional safeguards are complied with as far as inspectors, e.g. business premises only. Business premises are also private premises, so what do you mean by that exactly? And lastly, as far as the appeals are concerned, I just have a concern that there's a time limit specified within which the appeal has to be noted. But I see you put in a provision in the Act which says that the decision stands until such time as the appeal board has made their finding on the appeal. Now, my concern is that the person's right to appeal is going to be rendered meaningless because people are going to have, you know, the appeal board can just take forever and a day until the event is actually finished to make their decision. And should we not put in some kind of provision there which forces them to make a decision within a certain time, or at least a certain time before the event actually happens? Thanks.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Coincidentally, the last two speakers somehow took the two points that I wanted to flag for discussion. But I want to start off and preface my question as follows, that we agree with the general objectives of what the bill seeks to achieve. But we also add our chorus and say that in the first world, if we had first world infrastructure, the bill had a chance of succeeding. But having said that, Madam Chair, there's a reason why I'm prefacing what I'm saying in this manner, because there's a lot of overlap in terms of the questions that have been raised, and we as the League would also like to pick up on those and give you some flesh at the appropriate time. Having said that, a direct question to Gideon. In his presentation, he did make reference to the fact that an event organizer must submit the plan annually. And tied to that is the question of public liability insurance. Now, I want to find out if Gideon and his team did consider a situation where the municipalities themselves are an event organizer for a once-off event, firstly. Secondly, if they did so, would the requirement of public liability insurance be applicable to that sphere of government? I have reason to believe that there are issues with regard to government and insurances. And I'm just asking that in that line because the Act is written in a very peremptory manner. If you don't qualify with that requirement, it means that event will not take place. To assist him, he needs to also acknowledge that 90% of the stadium in respect of which the sport of football is played is actually owned by municipalities themselves. So in essence, the municipalities are going to regulate themselves because they are the ones who have to give those certificates. And that is a real concern that I would like him to clarify as well.
Thank you, Chairperson. No, I wanted my Chairperson to set up. Chairperson, my name is Litos Uka, and I'm sorry to be late due to accident fallout. I just want to check, Chairperson, surely this bill does cover both the formal and informal sporting codes in South Africa, the indigenous, and those that are formal in a sense, I want to believe. And also it does cover the outdoor sport, indoor sports, and outdoor sports activities. And I'm glad that the chairperson has raised the matter of the water sport so that it can be incorporated into the bill so that it does not stand as an island on its own amongst the many sporting codes that we have in South Africa. The other matter, chairperson, because in this issue of the indigenous, on a lighter note, this issue is indicating Mapindong. I just want to check, chairperson, the capacity of the police, because once you talk of state and security on the bill, it means you overstretch the capacity of the police. Surely there should be some serious thinking as to how to beef up. I know the Minister of Police did indicate that they will increase their personnel moving towards 2010-2011 by X number of police. But in the manner in which this bill is trying to secure our spectators, our role players, surely it will have to have financial implications thereof. I would want to check that maybe it's too early. I will raise it in an appropriate topic, this issue of the costing of the bills vis-a-vis the capacity of the police and other role players. Just this bill, so is it not going to be, it's not going to be fast-tracked? Because if you are saying is those positively coincident with 2010, but surely also are making some safety valves towards that 2010. So this bill is not going to be fast-tracked. It's going to be a bill that will take its normal course so that nobody is spending to push very hard. I know we are working towards next April in terms of the projections, so that there's sufficient consultation with the various stakeholders in consulting about this bill. My last take, Chair, I am covered by the one speaker who was raising the issue of the third world vis-a-vis the first world. And in that context, the disadvantaged communities for having these plans and the marketing and meeting the requirements that are required by the bill. If you can look, because look, we are a developing state, and as we are developing, and also our approach in terms of the local governments, they should also be a developmental state on its own. but surely they would want also to be assisted in that regard, very much so, so that they understand their roles and responsibilities. Because some municipalities are metros, for instance, they don't have the metro police. They are depending solely on the staff, and yet the staff is already overstretched in terms of their responsibilities. Thank you, Chairperson.
I think that was the last question. If there isn't any other question,
thank you, Chairperson. Mine is just one simple question. Okay, Comrade Vuselelo Makakula. Okay. Enkosi, Chairman. African National Congress. Comrade Wolomiso. Mine is just one question. You see, when there is a play in one of the stadiums, the police are outside, and inside is the security. What will happen in this regard? I thank you.
Chairperson, I just want to know, you know, at these rugby matches, a lot of racism is happening. You know, the last time I went to Newlands, it was when South Africa played against France. And I was asked there by a white racist there, what does this couple to be the rugby? Who commits any bit of soccer? Now, how does this team look after such things?
Thank you for the question. Let's allow the team to respond to questions, and if we are within time, we might take follow-up questions, but if we are not, then we proceed.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. So obviously, I've been assisted here in this regard by our legal drafting team, and you know, having said that, I would prompt them to assist the particular meeting to address particular issues that they can, pronounce on. And having said that, I think, Mr. Ronan, you can deal with issues that relates to your field of experience and the expertise. I would greatly appreciate that. Thank you.
Honourable Chairpersons, Honourable Members, thank you very much. I'll deal with some of the more technical aspects, and the other issues will be left to my colleagues. With regard to Mr. McKenzie, the questions raised by you, the application process actually relates currently to only two persons, which is the National Commissioner of Police and the Minister for Safety and Security. And you will also recall that at the first sitting on the 11th of August, this committee gave direction to the drafting team to actually look at the situation where the Minister for Safety and Security would fall away and it would be remain within the domain of the National Commissioner. In terms of the timeframes, we are satisfied if this direction by the Portfolio Committee were to be introduced, that it is workable. Timeframes are stipulated in the bill before you. And most importantly is the flexibility thereof, where in terms of which we appreciate and understand the comments that have come from sporting administrators that they can't always submit a schedule. Now, obviously, the schedule aspect is quite important. It's important that we don't have the issue of resourcing being stretched by having a number of events on the same day. That's the first aspect of it. But we also make provision in the legislation, as you know, 5CB, for events that occur suddenly. And the Portfolio Committee quite rightly asked for the provision to be made even more clearer as far as that's concerned. As far as the 3-metre fence is concerned, I think that was picked up by you from the presentation. It certainly doesn't form part of the bill as such. It could form part of regulations, but what we'd like to say right up front, and it deals with one of the other questions that was mentioned with regard to developed world infrastructure versus a developing economy such as ours, that certainly it wouldn't apply to low-risk events, even, you know, with regard to any regulations that might be part pursuant to that. And I mean, cognizance is taken of the fact of the balancing of the financial aspects and the workability of that vis-a-vis the issue of enforcement, because it's no good having a world-class piece of legislation when it can't be enforced. And as the Honourable Member Halamisa said, we would be wasting our time. I think if you look, and I'd like to take this opportunity, I think it's important to note, and we've seen from some of the comments that have come in, that this bill has gone through quite a lengthy drafting process, and there wasn't earlier versions which were very lengthy, where the regulatory aspects were sort of incorporated within the principal legislation. But this bill has been significantly streamlined, and I think those who have studied this new bill will certainly see that. And if you look at the current structure of the bill, it basically deals with the following aspects. It deals with responsibilities, which I think is obviously key. We need to know who's responsible for what. It deals with the risk profiling of events, because obviously that allows you now to decide, you know, what measures need to be in place from a SAPS perspective and an event or organizer perspective. It talks about an annual schedule of events, and we said, well, we need to do that to ensure that we don't have these multiple events on the same day. We need integrated and timely safety and security planning, and these are not aspects that cost huge amounts of money. I mean, these are common sense things, and I think it's important to note that we do these things in South Africa. I mean, the South African Police Services and some of my colleagues behind me from the LOC, SAOC Security Department, I mean, they've been involved in intensive planning processes. But the problem we have in South Africa, that's the position of the department, is that they are not consistently applied. And I think that's the important aspect. One of the challenges that was mentioned earlier by Mr. Borsov is that what we have is a situation that often when law enforcement authorities of the state and emergency services are often faced by certain, not all, obviously, but certain event organizers who say, you ask us to put certain measures in place which you believe we need to have, but show us in legislation or otherwise which forces us to do this. Why must we do this? And I think that's one of the things that obviously the members and the members of Parliament, this committee, or the various committees will obviously be looking at. Then you've got minimum safety and security measures for medium and high-risk events. We've got event ticketing controls, and we've got the creation of offences. And I think one of the most important things that has been missed by some of the commentators on the draft bill is that the measures such as having a VOC in place, the measures such as having an event safety and security planning in place, is not there for example, for low-risk events. So it won't have an impact on low-risk events, for instance, at schools or small sporting codes or federations that don't have a lot of funding, etc. The primary focus of this legislation is sort of geared towards these higher-risk events, where we have, as you've seen in the presentation, had a number of incidents. Moving on to Member Halamisa, I just want to assure you, sir, that the definition of a stadium inside this legislation or a venue incorporates the surrounding areas. I think that's the first thing. And I think it follows the sort of line that's been taken by, say, for instance, the FIFA contractual platform as far as the definition of a stadium is concerned. The other aspect that you raised, I think I've dealt with as far as the developing and developed world scenario is concerned.
Sorry, Chappers, let me remind you. Can you comment on the current situation in Port Elizabeth Stadium, in particular, the access to that stadium, access route, and the situation around the stadium?
Member Halamisa, it is difficult for me to comment because it's not one of these stadiums that I was particularly involved with in terms of the infrastructural and safety and security design, but I see it is on the program, and I certainly, with your permission and the chairperson's permission, the chairperson's permission, will apply my minds to it, and will give comment, written comment to you on that, if that's all right with you, Ms. Tomlinson. The next submission, I think, on the issue of the FIFA submission, I think that's something the department and the chairperson of the portfolio committee, I believe, a written response has been prepared. And I don't want to say anything further than that, other perhaps to say that that some of the issues raised there aren't factually correct, and those issues are being dealt with by the department. As far as the question from the member who has dislocated the chamber, but I'd like to, on the safety certification, quite correct, there is an annual process of certification of stadiums and venues, and there's a grading of those stadiums and venues proposed in the legislation before you. And the grading relates to whether that particular venue can host a high-risk event, a medium-risk event, a low-risk event, or all of the above. And in order to deal with a situation, obviously, where a stadium has had been altered or a venue has been altered, they will then have to resubmit themselves to that annual process of certification. The appeal board, I'll leave that to Gideon, other than to say to you, members present, that the portfolio committee has not been happy with certain of the aspects of the appeal board as it appears before the legislation before you, and on the 11th of August has already directed that certain changes be made in line with other legislation which this portfolio committee has already passed. As far as the questions from the PSL are concerned, thank you very much, sir. Yes, there are no exemptions for municipalities, and certainly those municipalities that do have infrastructure will be required to comply, and yes, there may be certain challenges. I'm unaware of those challenges with regard to the taking out of public liability insurance, but certainly if they are an event organizer, and remember we must make that distinction between what a controlling body is, an event organizer is, and a stadium venue owner. So if they are indeed an event organizer, it will be the responsibility to ensure that proper public liability insurance is in place. As far as the certification aspect is concerned, yes, something that was picked up by the chairperson and some of the honourable members that were at the previous session on the 11th of August. In earlier versions of the bill, we did talk about certification by an independent registered engineer, a structural engineer. We've been asked to reconsider that as a reintroduction with the state law advisors that municipalities will then have to appoint a certified structural engineer or similar to make the necessary certification with regard to the issue raised on the possible conflict of interest. I've dealt with Mr. Suka, the developed world versus developing world is concerned. I think the other aspect, the general question relating to police outside and security inside, is best left to the experts in that, which are the South African Police Services on my left. But I just wanted to say, with regard to the comment made by the honourable member about racist behaviour at sporting events, in particular rugby, and I think all of us, in one way or another, who go to these events have seen it, and it's unacceptable in our society. That's the first thing I'd like to place on record, and certainly that is why we have introduced the concept of an exclusion notice to deal with persons such as Mr. Funk Sale or Peter John Smith. Just as an aside, I think sometimes it's quite nice to bring a bit of lightheartedness to a quorum such as this, but what I'd like to say to you is that his real name is actually Peter John Smith. He was a chukka fisherman that had left the Humansdorp area in St. Francis by leaving millions of rands worth of debt. And unfortunately, fired a full of brandy, as that gentleman was, I shouldn't call him a gentleman, that hooligan was, as when he ran onto the field and embarrassed our country. And I think Killian is quite right when he says that, you know, the International Rugby Board still referred to that. And we picked it up during the recent unsuccessful, although very close, 2015 Rugby World Cup bid, where this, you know, this sort of aspect was raised again, and it was sort of very unfortunate. But he was recognized, be it 30 kilograms heavier, on the television when he ran on the field. So aside from the 10,000 rand fine, which probably wasn't sufficient what he got, his creditors did actually catch up with him. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You will have only 3 minutes, sir.
Yes, I will. I'm typically policeman, Madam Chair, and I'm very glad this is the first time before you, so it's an honor for me. I will very quickly respond. With regards to the question of the honorable member, with regards to the mamas outside shutting their wares, I think I can assure this committee that only the high-risk events and some of the medium-risk events where there are commercial rights involved, etc., would cater for that. The normal South African vendors, especially at the low-risk and at the rural events, will not be affected by this. the second issue is with regards to the access to the stadium, especially the one in Port Elizabeth. What I can say is that this bill covers the situation where the Safety and Security Committee may make provision for traffic-free zones, for designated areas where people may not bring vehicles into or only designated vehicles. And although this legislation and the 2010 legislation this legislation will not cater for the 2010 tournament, Gideon referred to the fact that they are lifted from there, and I think you will have seen during the Confederation Cup, I think that aspect was really covered very professionally by the planning committees. And those issues are addressed in Clause 19 and Clause 21. With regards to the once-off events, I think the bill caters for that in Section 531. Mr. Ronan referred to that. With regards to the insurance of the municipalities, Madam Chair, I conferred quickly with a state law advisor. We will have to confer on that and address the committee at a later stage. Unfortunately, there are some issues that we will have to clear up regarding the Public Finance Management Act. With regard to the question of honourable member of the police, the capacity of the police, what I can say is this bill actually formalises what the police are doing at the moment. I think my boss, the National Commissioner, recently mentioned that we are 12,000 members short of 200,000. And I think that the capacity, not only in terms of numbers, but in terms of knowledge and experience, does exist. It happens on a daily basis that we deal with major events. And I think the police will be ready, not only in terms of manpower and experience, but also our budget. Because we do budget for this and we deal with this on a very regular basis. Also, I might just mention that the issue of the VOC itself, the establishment of a VOC, one might gain the impression from the bill that there will have to be a big separate room that's filled with all kinds of equipment. At medium risk events, it has often happened that there is what we refer to as a mobile VOC, which is a vehicle sometimes even that is fitted with the necessary radio equipment in order to coordinate the safety and security measures at the stadium. So I think the especially the phasing in periods in the bill will benefit those stadiums that will be allowed to stage the high-risk events. And then lastly, with regards to Mr. Peter John Smith, as I now found out, I always thought he was from Tau, there is a specific offence in the bill dealing with racist remarks. And I think this is a major improvement on the current situation, and we will be able to prosecute those people and really teach them a lesson. Thank you, Chair. I think that covers all the safety and security aspects.
And thank you, Chair. I just want to get the clarity on what you commented on. On Omam Kiza to be around there to sell the pop and vors and all that. Are you saying at the high risk event you exclude them? And then, or what is that? Because the FIFA 2010 competition is a high risk event, but we have created a dispensation there, you know, that there should be Omam Kiza accredited there for whatever they want to do there. Now, I want to understand what you're saying. Maybe I got in here when already they explained something, but I have heard you saying at the low-risk events where there are no all these other requirements, it's okay. But at a high risk event, that is where activity is taking place. So we want to see them there. I want to understand that.
Yes, Chairman, thank you for that question. I will gladly accept that I didn't cover the point comprehensively. I think what the situation is at the moment, especially with the FIFA games, is that those previously disadvantaged vendors are being drawn into the fold, but they are accredited or authorized, rather, by FIFA to act there. A similar situation exists in this bill where your informal traders will have, some of them will have the authority, but what we talk about when we, especially when we refer to high risk events, is, for instance, access routes for emergency medical vehicles. We cannot have certain traders doing trade there. And the high risk and the higher medium risk categories of events, the planning should be that the vendors are accommodated there as far as possible, but it will depend on where they are situated and how far from the stadium also they are situated. Thank you, Chair.
I will take your handset, but it is the last one.
Thanks ever so much, lady, for taking my hand. Now, Chairperson, I think perhaps the question was asked by Mr. McKenzie, but you know, we are talking about spectators and we are talking about the stadium and the owners and these things. But I was listening to a radio program this morning. It was about last Saturday. It's not only those people that must be safe. The whole area, the surrounding area must be safe. Because the people were complaining that, you know, the people leave the stadium and they come and trash and they come and destroy property in the vicinity. Now, Chairperson, isn't there a way that those people should also have a say in what is happening in their sort of vicinity? That's how I feel, having listened to them. And we all know what's happening. We all know it happens. So what is there that can make them feel safe too?
You have 30 seconds there to respond.
Thank you, Chair. I will only need that. Honourable Chair, the question to that, or the answer to that question is actually very simple. When we have this bill in place, clauses 19 and 21 will enable us to put a designated area around that stadium to channel the spectators away in an orderly fashion and also as quickly as possible to specifically prevent situations like this. At the moment, it's a lot more difficult for the police. We don't have the necessary legal powers to close off streets and have traffic management areas. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, a hypothetical question. Suppose the cause of the riot has been caused by an officiating officer. What powers the police have to investigate?
I think the chairperson will respond, General Walonis. We thank you for the presentations and responses and questions from members. We have to move on to. Oh, okay, the chairperson wants to ask the very last question.
Yeah. Sorry, my co-chair knows that I am not a very fast learner, intelligent person. I always ask, when you say you only do a designated area, what the question that is asked by Honorable Lise, there is a pattern. When you are in Bloemfontein, there is a street called, it's Maitland, and then the other one is at the back, it's called, forgotten what it is. When the fence comes from the stadium in Bloemfontein and walk into that street, you get all the shops smashed, especially when Celtics has lost. But now he's saying, that fear, they said that, oh God, today is gay, we don't know. Let's lose in the docks, because those who come from that game are going to smash everything as they go down there. Now he's saying, what is this that would make those people not to have a fear for any other game? After the game, they become victims. Whereas in the designated area, there's nothing. They will never cause problems there. But as soon as they leave there, they go somewhere. He wanted to do that. Now, I'm saying to you, check what is the responsibility of the state in an event, in a designated area, and there's nothing that is happening, and then beyond that, and then what should be the because if anything would go well, Donald would say, let us put a clause there that suggests that we track them and all those things. But I think there is a mechanism by the state in such an environment where they have now taken another responsibility beyond the designated area. Yes.
Thank you, Chairman. I think this also addresses the question about the security inside and the police outside the stadium. The police work according to what we refer to as concentric circles or concentric rings of security. Some of them will be inside the stadium. There will be a reaction team of the police inside the stadium at, for instance, a high-risk event to ensure that crowds are managed properly and that the security officers inside are assisted properly. And as we move away from the stadium, we will have the designated area where there obviously is a lot of police presence with barricades, sometimes even physical barricades. But the way in which this bill will assist the police, Chairman, is that the designation of that event as medium or high risk will assist the Event Safety and Security Committee to plan properly for each event. To say we have a security situation or a police operation inside the designated area, but especially with the type of games that you refer to, Chairman, we will be able to say but in specific areas we will have to have police doing general patrols. That is being done at the moment, but the designation itself, I think, will assist the Security Committee to motivate those police resources. And when we have to report to the Parliamentary Committee on Police, we can motivate why we had to use those resources at those games. I hope that answers the question.
Comrade Cindy, the one of somebody who's racing and then there's chaos there, we will discuss outside, because I don't have a vested interest in that one.
Thank you very much, and thank you for responding to questions. We will move on to presentations by stakeholders, the first one being Sira. I think you are ready just to zoom in so that we are again on time. Over to you, Sira.
Honourable members, the presentation by Sira, the copy is on the way. They have sent us that through the email yesterday. So there is a little bit of a not that one. So the PowerPoint presentation. So they are going to present this, and then it's coming. Then you'll get it. whilst they are busy with technology, we can just have the 2 minutes, 3 minutes, and then others going to refresh and come back quickly. Members, the delegation from Syria is ready to start, so that we are on time. I think we better move on. We have, so I think we better settle down so that we can proceed with the presentation. I think the 2 minutes break is over now. We must definitely proceed. Ms. Tenduli, over to you with your team.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the police and for sports and recreation. It's quite once more enlightening to us, to some of us, to be in this august room. I'll be representing the Private Security Regulatory Authority. The essence of what this institution is about, Chairperson, is about to make sure that the bodies and the gadgets that are used by any person in security matters, in trying to provide security service, that person must make sure that it's in compliance with the laws of this country. I shall repeat that. Any person who uses a person, be it an officer or a gadget, that has to do with security matters, that person must be in compliance with the regulations of this country. Chairperson, would you realize that there's no way that the police in this country can be everywhere, but the private security industry, they would then, some of them, be sourced out to provide the security in different areas. We do not enter into the fray of tenders, who issues this, who issues that. Our brief is just to look at those persons to say, have they been duly accredited to do that job? You'd realize that some of them, they use sophisticated machines for security keeping up. And some of them, for example, I'll just use one. If you look at a gun holder must also have a gun what you call compliance certificate. You can have a gun, but you may not have a compliance certificate. Then you are the person that we are looking for, that we must not be in the service of providing the security. As a result, I'm here representing the institution and my colleague there, I think Stefan Badenhorst, will make the presentation. Present with me is Mr. Mboza, the law enforcement division manager, together with the manager of communications, that's Sizwe Zuma. And like I said, we have our presenter there, Mr. Badenhorst, who will be talking to the presentation. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Ntuli, Chairperson, honorable members. The brief of my presentation will deal basically with the SIRA itself and our establishment for the members to get a better understanding who we are from a legislative point of view. I intend to focus a little bit also on the issues of our act and the definitions of our legislation and how it relates to event security, and then we'll move on to some comment as far as the bill itself is concerned. Maybe just for all the members' understanding of SIRA itself, we established in terms of the Private Security Industry Regulation Act, Section 2 of the Act, which Act came into operation in 2002. And our primary objective and responsibility is to ensure that there's proper regulation of the occupation of security service providers, obviously in the interest of the state, in the interest of the public itself, as well as the interest of the private security industry as well. Now, we also, the reason for the legislation is to promote and encourage professionalism in the security industry. And when we are referring to professionalism, we're basically referring to competency and training standard of the security industry itself, and that they are competent to perform their particular functions. The Act also allows for a promulgation of an enforceable code of conduct for security service providers, which we will touch on a little bit later in the presentation. And ultimately, you know, the Act is established to maintain a trustworthy and legitimate security industry that acts in terms of the principles of contained in the Constitution and other legislation. Now, from the SIRA itself as a body, and from a legal perspective, we are a statutory body established in terms of the Act. We are Schedule 3A national public entity in terms of the PFMA, and we are organ of state in our status in terms of the Constitution. And we are charged with responsibility to ensure the industry is adequately regulated by using our statutory powers. Objects of regulating the security industry obviously ensure, first of all, a legitimate private security industry, protection of the public interest as well as the state interest in rendering that particular service. We also need to ensure, and that's one of the objects, to ensure that the proper quality of service is rendered to consumers. Now, from an event perspective, obviously, we are referring to the owners as well as the organizers. And then we look at the protection of rights of employee security officers. Although there is labor legislation that determines the minimum conditions of employment, the authority does have a statutory mandate to ensure that the rights of employee security officers rendered security services are adequately protected through our own investigations. Promotion and protection of the status of occupation security service provider is basically to uplift the status of the occupation. Generally, it's always been considered a security industry. We refer to night watchmen and those types of terminology. And our aim is to uplift and professionalize the security industry. And ultimately, we also provide accurate information to the Minister of Police as far as the security industry is concerned. Now, maybe just to understand the primary regulatory functions. Now, the authority in terms of Section 4 of the Act has got numerous functions, but for understanding, our primary function, this is basic to the regulation of this industry, is requirement that all security service providers, whether a business or a security officer, the individuals, are registered. We maintain a database consisting of all registered and security service providers. For information's sake, there's just under 1.4 million registered security officers currently on our database, of which in a region of 380,000 is currently active in the industry. Besides that, we've got just under 7,000 registered and active security businesses operating in the country. Now, as part of the registration process, there's numerous requirements a person must meet in order to be registered, but with part of this registration requirement is also the screening of the security service providers to ensure that we do not allow security officers in industry that's been convicted of serious criminal offenses as contained in the schedule of our Act. And then we also look at quality assurance of training standards of the security industry. We are in the process in an advanced stage of determining new training standards for all the different categories of service providers.
Chairperson, just a small thing. I just want to, I'm interested in the statistics. Just that brief background outside this, the registered, unregistered statistics of the security companies, private security companies in South Africa.
Mr. Chair, I can give the exact figures to the honourable member. The current registration statistics of the private security industry in this country. So I just want to get the document. There is currently 1,362,000 registered individual security officers on our database. Of those registered security officers, 376,061 is active, currently active in the industry. If the honourable member would like, I've got a geographical breakdown of the statistics as well in all the different provinces. And from a security business perspective, there's currently 6,922 security businesses registered and active in the private security industry. Other functions of law of the authorities, obviously law enforcement, to ensure that security supervisors are inspected, and if they do not comply to the to our legislation as well as the code of conduct, to prosecute such security supervisors, and then again advising the Minister of Police on the making of regulations where we believe further regulations will enhance the regulation of the occupation of security service providers. My next slide deals basically with the statutory requirements of the Act as well as the regulations as far as event security is concerned, how it impacts on the particular bill. Now, in terms of the Section 1 of our legislation, it defines a security service. Now, security service refers to a person who, for remuneration, reward, benefit, or fee, provide a service aimed at ensuring order and safety on the premises used for sporting, recreational, entertainment, or similar purposes. As the honourable members can see from the definition of event security, it refers to order and safety, and not just safeguarding, you know, persons at a particular event. Special events venue, just an interpretation. This is from the NQF Registered Unit Standards, registered by SACWA, which deals with a specific training standards for persons rendering security service at special events. It gives a definition or explanation of what is called a special events venue, and that's a premises used for sporting, recreational, entertainment, or similar purposes, irrespective of whether a relevant text takes place on an ongoing basis or on a single occasion, and to which members of the public or any other category class of public are invited or to which they are permitted to have access. We use this definition or explanation of what a special events venue as well as when it comes to enforcement of our legislation. Maybe just a point of note is that we're also considering viewing the bill. I think there must also be a clear understanding of what's the major event, and that's basically the declaration by Cabinet, as we've seen in the World Cup, where the safety and security structures of the African government assumes ultimate responsibility for the safety and security of the particular event. Now, in terms of our current training regulations, that's regulations made in 1998 and was published in Board Notice 119 of 1998. The following persons that provide the following categories of security services at an event must be registered with the authority. And that is any person who affects a bodily and or physical search at the entry point to your special events venue. That's usually your security officers at the turnstiles and the access control points and exit control points. Any person who forms part of a security reaction team at a special event. Any person who affects close protection duties at special events, persons handling dogs, and then any person who forms part of a field control or crowd control team at a special event must be registered with the authority. Other categories, maybe summarize all the different categories, because when we are talking about event security, we are not just referring, and when it comes to registration of CIRA, we are not just referring to the guarding sector as usually believed. We are here referring to, besides guarding sector, also your CPOs, your response, your event security. And here we are referring to security officers as well as stewards. And we'll come back to our submission as far as the bill is concerned when it makes reference to stewards. Also, your control room or surveillance operators from a CCTV and an alarm perspective must all be registered with the authority. Persons managing, controlling, or supervising any of those security services. Also, your electronic industry, your installers or your preparers of security equipment,
CCTV at special events, alarm, access control, bomb detection, metal detection, X-ray inspections, all the persons involved in installation and repairing of that particular security equipment must be registered to the authority. And also your advisors, your consultants, persons giving advice on the protection of safeguarding of a person or property at a special event order or on the use of security equipment must be registered, and then inclusion as well is the car guard industry that's working outside of the particular stadium. Now, there's different objects for CIRA to regulate the security services at events. Obviously, again, to ensure that the security service providers act in the public interest, that they are trustworthy, they are professional, they are competent to render the particular service which were given to them to perform. Obviously, ultimately, to provide fullest protection to the public and the spectators at large at the entertainment venue, and also to ensure that the interest of the owner or the event organizer is in ultimately protected through their particular security service. And then also to ensure that they respect the rights of members of the public who they come into contact. How that is done is through law enforcement. There is a code of conduct for security service providers. I'm not going to go into detail on the purpose of the code, but a code of conduct for security service providers is regulations published in 2003, and it sets out rules and obligations security service providers must meet towards the public, towards clients, towards the state, towards the authority itself, and which ultimately, if they contravene any of those code of conduct rules, they are committing not only a criminal offense, but also an offense in terms of the code of conduct. One of the objects also is ensure that the payment of relevant wages to the security officers and prevent exploitation or abuse of employees in the private security industry. It's generally accepted that there is a significant abuse of the rights of employees, security officers in the industry, and a code of conduct allows for the authority to prosecute security service providers that do not comply with minimum legislation governing conditions of employment. It's a specific regulation, 18 in the code of conduct, that deals with obligations a security service provider at a specific event has in terms of the code of conduct and sets out basically a rule. Considering all of the foregoing, our legislation is therefore addressing quite a number of issues relating to event security and the requirement that the event security service providers must be registered with the authority. Now, following on, therefore, it's our view that the bill should recognize that in the following respect as well. We took note of the definitions in the bill that refers to security service providers, security officers, but we also believe that the steward should be registered with our, in terms of our legislation. If one considers all the definitions highlighted in our legislation, steward is also performing a security service. They are responsible for controlling of crowds, and therefore that fact must be recognized in the bill. So we're making a proposal on what should be the proposed definition, highlighting a steward means a security officer as defined in Section 1 of the Private Security Industry Regulation Act, and a person appointed in Section 3.4b of the bill. I think that will recognize the fact that stewards should also be registered with the authority. Now, as mentioned, the requirement for registration with the authority is for the authority to screen those stewards to ensure that they meet the minimum requirements for registration, which verifies quite a number of issues, such as the person must be a South African citizen or permanent resident in the country, they must be at least minimum of 18 years of age, they must not have been convicted of scheduled offences, and they must be adequately trained for the particular security service or steward function they intend to perform at a special event. The authority will then register, if a person meets all that requirement, register the person as an event security officer, and the steward can then perform that particular function. For interest sake, currently the authority, in terms of the regulations of 1998, when it refers to event security training, there's only over 1,000 security officers in this country that is registered and trained to perform event security. Now, we are very well aware that there's a number of events taking place every single weekend and during the week, and those security officers obviously are not meeting the minimum requirements. Just over 1,000, Chairperson.
That are lawfully.
That are lawfully trained currently to render special event security at an event. Also our submission that the role of the private security industry regulatory authority should be recognized in the bill, and specifically when we're talking about the event security planning committee and in terms of section 16.3,
The current definition, current section provides for all different role players to form part of the Event Security Planning Committee, and it's our submission, as seen in the proposed section, that also represents the private security industry regulatory authority should play a role in the Event Security Planning Committee. Now, the reason for that is for the authority itself to give the necessary guidance and assistance to the planning committee to ensure that they only use legitimate security businesses, first of all, to perform the security service, and then also to make sure that ultimately the stewards and the security officers that are going to be used for this event is vetted by the authority in making sure that they are adequately trained and registered to perform that particular security service. Our role in the Safety and Security Planning Committee was obviously to ensure that the owners of the stadiums and the event organizers meet their statutory obligation in terms of Section 38.3G of the Private Security Industry Regulation Act. Now, Section 38.3G of the Act places a specific legal obligation on consumers of security services to ensure that they only use legitimate security service providers, from a business perspective all the way to a security officer perspective. The authority can play a role to verify and vet those security businesses applying for tenders to perform security services and ensure that we give the necessary support and information that only legitimate security businesses obtain contracts. We also look at other statutory obligations in terms of our Act when we provide this information. That information includes the following, for instance, that the business is legally registered, the number and details of employee security officers that business actually has in their employment, to ensure and give information as far as the registration status of the directors, the members, and owners of those companies or close corporations are concerned, that they are legitimate and can operate and fulfill their obligations in terms of the Act. We all can also assist with the illustrative contract pricing structure. As I mentioned, one of our objects is to ensure that employees are not exploited in the event security environment, and our illustrative contract pricing structure is a guideline for event organizers and owners to verify that the security officers ultimately will receive the wages they are entitled to receive in terms of labor legislation. We also intend then, if we are part of this committee, to provide information on the actual employee security officers. I think that is where a major problem is arising currently in event safety and security, as that the employee security officers, although they are classified by the event organizers as the so-called security officers or stewards, they are not legally registered. The fact that they are in a uniform or are given a distinctive clothing to claim that they are security officers doesn't mean that they are security officers and doesn't mean that they are trained to perform the particular security service that they intend to do there. So the authority can play a very valuable role in ensuring that we vet those security officers and submit a report on the individual status of each of those security officers, where they are registered with the employee security with the private security and regulatory authority, and as well as their level of training. What is their level of training? If they are going to perform access control, are they trying to perform access control in terms of our regulations? Are they trying to perform special events training or services which include crowd control? Ultimately, that is our requirements in terms of our legislation. As mentioned earlier, we're in the process of, and it's a very advanced state, in publishing new legislation for the different categories of class security service providers as far as training is concerned. So there will be a specialization training for event security, where it's recognized that event security officer is different from a normal security officer performing patrolling functions. So this particular skills program is based on a qualification registered by SACO on a national qualifications framework. It's from the general security practices qualification, and it highlights access control functions, control, monitoring crowds, and use of security equipment at special events. We also consider there's quite a number of challenges for implementation of the bill, which we're not going to go into detail. I think we recognize the fact that there's different portfolios under one legislation. Chairperson also mentioned that in the introduction, where the SAPS and the Minister of Sport has got dual responsibility and accountability in terms of the legislation. We believe that will be a significant challenge when it comes to the implementation of the legislation. And we also want to caution, honourable members, that this legislation should not create an impression that a new legislation is established to regulate security in the special events environment. The Private Security Industry Regulatory Authority is a statutory body established in terms of the Act of Parliament to ensure that the security industry in the event environment is regulated. Thank you very much.
No, thanks, Chairperson. Now, from our side, we're therefore then also saying that we need to try and move away from operating in silos. You know, for the authority to do its work, we need to have plans in place by the people who are planning to do what. Whatever you are planning, just tell us. For example, that now we'll have this event at this particular time. Do your own assessment and the choice of the companies or any person that you are employing. Then on our side, we are then able to plan on the strength of our own ratio to say, if, for example, we are going to have a crowd of this much, you know, for our side to make sure that we are able to do adequate inspection. We just need at least that estimation because that empowers us to then be able to deploy accordingly, you know. Because otherwise, some of the things that happen, they happen because it becomes very clear that the security companies are not going to be caught, you know, because there was no clear information given at first. That's one thing. But the other thing which we would like to also emphasize is the question of human security. To say, if you look into the security industry, you find that the personnel that are being employed, like my colleague referred to, the guards, and you mentioned them, are underpaid. And for us, we can't change this country if we have got institutions in private sector, and including government. And government is one of the largest, actually, service providers that comes from security. Almost all of our government buildings are guarded by a security company. But those security companies, are they compliant with the laws, that is the labor laws? But that labor law department will deal with it. But on our side, are they in compliance with the authorities, you know, the standards, to say these people are adequately trained, you know, to do the specific job as security officers? Hence, we say it doesn't matter whether the person you give him a green or a red overall or a pink one, but what is important is the service that the person is dispensing. That service needs to be regulated. Otherwise, we're going to have people in the country, for example, some of them, you find that they are murderers, but they are in the security guard. You know, on our side, CIRA is a private security industry regulating authority, are working in conjunction with Home Affairs, with NIA, and other state organs, where we are sharing the data of these personnel. So the question of submission of the name of the service provider is not enough. We check the name, we also check the personnel under that name to make sure that there is compliance. Because some of them, you find that they are even actually not South African nationals. We are not antagonists to them, but we are saying we want to track everyone's fingerprints to know that when we are saying people are in safe hands, indeed are not being left in the hands of murderers and other, what you call, other people who are actually not supposed to be providing such service. So that's the largest thing that we are actually calling for as the regulatory authorities, that can we please comply and can the plans be upfront, because that will assist us to put our plans to monitor and regulate accordingly. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you very much for the presentation and for the input. I can see that members want to ask questions. That is exactly what we are going to do now. If members want to ask questions, let them indicate by raising their hands. Honorable General Lolomisa, Honorable Vincent Makakula, Honorable Popi, Honorable Angie, Honorable Faye, and you have been the last one. In that order, let's ask questions.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question is a little bit off the point, in that I'm just looking at your badge. Don't you think you could have done something better to that badge? Tends to remind us of the old legacies and old badges in old municipalities and union buildings and so on. I think it's just an advice. Just look at it. You need to polish the branding of this institution, especially that it is. It has been established by this government of all South Africa. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to know about the issue of the steward. Seemingly, is the issue that has been introduced recently, and now we are talking about some 300 days that remaining to the soccer match, and to the 2010 years. How are you going to deal about this issue of the steward? Because in your training, you indicate that you were busy training the securities, but not the steward. But now all the provinces must have the steward. And how are you going to cover that? I think.
Thanks, Chairperson. Good day, everybody. My name is Bobby Mutumi, and I would like to apologize on your behalf for having started the meeting before I arrived. I know that it wasn't your intention to do that. It's only time that forced you to do that. So my apology on your behalf. Chairperson, let me also thank the presenters for this presentation that they have made. What I'd like to find out is on page 13 that deals with the categories or classes of the securities. I know that they don't, although we are currently dealing with sports, but we are not only focusing on sports. We are focusing on the function of the private security in general. What I'd like to find out is, where do they put, because maybe it's my lack of knowledge or understanding, where do they place those that deal with cash and transit in these categories, which I believe is a problem, and that work is being done by private security, to my knowledge. So I'd like to find out where do they categorize or where do they place that security. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is on the issue of exploitation of security guards. Is their grading being monitored? For instance, if a security guard has grade B, is he not being given the salary of a grade D person? And the areas, I know they must vary from area to area. Is this also being monitored to say a security guard in area one, for instance, cannot get the same salary as the security guard in area two? Is this being monitored? And you mentioned a figure of 1,000 security guards. Are you saying they are in possession of special event certificate or only the security training certificate? Thank you.
Yes, this side. Yes, Honorable,
Chairperson, the other day we spoke about, it was about definitions. And now this morning the gentleman mentioned the word steward again, and the word steward came up the other day. Now he's your steward and you, I'm steward, the same steward. In other words, is it the same thing that we are talking about and what the bill is referring or the law is referring to?
Chairperson, I do have many questions, but I am saying to myself there is a portfolio committee that is responsible to oversee this function so that we don't make unnecessary repetition. Because I would have loved to see that they respond or the submission to the proposed bill so that we get their mind as to, because it seems to me they are not necessarily opposed in principle in supporting this bill, except to say that they are cautioning us not to deviate from that mandate. And as such, I think that's what the spirit of their presentation is saying. Over and above, they are giving us that information to say we have traveled so far and these are the people with whom we are working. because my little issue, is, one question maybe, is around the insurance for those workers that they are engaging in such activities. Are they covered? Their personal covered through insurance policies, or what is their status, given the fact that their personnel already, they say themselves that they are underpaid severely and they would want government to do something. I thought that they would initiate that so that everybody at least is having an acceptable salary, a basic salary that is acceptable. Just want to check that. Otherwise, all other matters, I will park them for the capable chairperson from police. Thank you.
Thank you for that, for not being tempted to ask such questions. Thank you. I've seen Mr. T, my former National Commissioner of Correctional Services, in the last Monday.
I suspect the intervention by the Honorable Member Suka may be talking to the issue that I would have wanted to raise as it relates to the proposal by Sarah in terms of his participation in planning committee. Whether this is a proposal that will talk to the need for reviewing their scope of work as a committee, and whether in reviewing that, the regulatory element would remain relevant if they are going to participate in this. But having said that, I think many of us are in recognition of the role that CIRA and our planning phases to ensure that all what they have presented is more around this new participation in planning committee. That possibly gives a little bit of, but I'm just saying it may be that it's a matter that would have to be processed by the relevant portfolio committee in terms of its consideration for and its relevance in this particular. Thanks, Chair. I think one will confine his comments at this point in time only to that.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is just very short. I just want to check with Sira as to whether now that they want to get the securities registered, are the financial gains that they are making now that securities will be registered under them. But the other thing is it's fairer to check as to now that they'll be having securities registered, what would happen in event whereby a person is identified as a murderer? What action are they going to take? Thank you.
If there aren't questions, then we'll allow the delegation to respond. If it is a question, they will take it, but you will definitely be given an opportunity to say something on the presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable Members, first of all, the Honourable Members mission on our logo is noted. I think it's something that the authority is working with to try and amend that logo. I agree, it's been in place. Mr. Chairperson, we inherited this logo from...
it's just that I want to check, because there is a logo for the country now, and you are directly part of government, not indirect. Now, I think General, although he's in a lighter note, but that suggests subversion. He wants to know what does that thing mean. Okay. I don't know what was that logo for.
Mr. Chairperson, unfortunately, I can't give an answer on what does the logo actually represent. It was inherited, I must add, from our predecessor body, the Security Officers Board. That was originally established in legislation promulgated in 1987. Which legislation came into operation in 1990, and the authority which replaced the private the Security Officers Board, the Security Officers Interim Board, basically inherited that logo. But I agree that it is about time that the logo should be revised. Point is taken. Thank you.
That includes the motion. They are surely the logo goes with the motto, so that it's not there now. It's yet. I read it, so surely they will have to revise it also. You can read it because I don't know. Say Italian.
Thank you, Chairperson. The next question dealt with the issue of stewards and how we intend to deal with the stewards as far as training is concerned. And it made specific reference to the World Cup in less than 300 days. Now, as Ms. Ntuli has explained, the authority obviously wants to provide adequate information to the organizing committee to make sure that they only use legitimate security businesses as well as legitimate security officers and stewards to perform the security services. In that regard, we requested the LOC already to try and provide us the necessary information of who's the security business that will eventually render the security service, as well as ultimately obtaining the details of the security officers that will be rendering that particular security service. As Ms. Ntuli has mentioned,
the security during the Confederation in Bloemfontein, there was a plain security used there, if you recall. Did you check the security in Bloemfontein, whether it complies to your regulation or you've just given to the LOC to do security and then you had nothing to do with the vetting and checking all the nuts and bolts in the security? Because I can give you 150%. In Bloemfontein during the Confederation, those were securities, private security, that I know. I want to check have you checked on that, or did they ask permission from you to do that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the Bloemfontein matter, there I think it was 520 security officers that were used. What happened prior to the Confederations Cup is we requested the information from the organizing committee so we could in advance provide this assistance that we are proposing through the planning committee to the organizing committee to verify whether security officers are in fact registered, whether they are trained, whether they have got the specific specialization to perform event security. We unfortunately did not receive the information in time for this particular event. This matter, I must add, Mr. Chairperson, is subject to an investigation currently by the authority, which is in advanced stages on this particular issue. So, Mr. Chairperson, this persons and honourable members, just to come back to the point, we basically therefore can assist the organising committee and any organising event organisers to ensure that they only use legitimate security service providers and security officers, which is adequately trained to perform the particular security service. But we do need that information in advance. Considerable time is needs to be spent to vet those security officers to ensure that they are legitimate, that they can be used, and are adequately trained to perform that security service in the end of the day. That is why we are proposing as well that CIRA should play part of this planning committee
do in order to ensure and push our agenda to get that information timelessly to make sure that event organizers do deploy registered and adequately trained security officers. The issue on the different classes of security service providers, a specific reference was made by an honourable member on the cash and transit industry. I apologize, my slide only refers to security service providers that we believe render security service at an event. If you look at the definition of security service in terms of Section 1 of the Act, it includes quite a number of other categories that I did not mention in this particular slide, such as cash and transit industry. It includes your private investigators, in-house security officers, locksmiths, for instance. So there's quite a number of other categories of class security service providers that's also regulated in terms of the Private Security Industry Regulation Act. The issue on the grading and specifically reference made on the salary, maybe just for chairpersons and honourable members, a brief explanation how the salary structure works in the security industry. The Private Security Industry Regulatory Authority does not determine minimum conditions of employment for security officers. That is the responsibility of the Minister of Labour. And that is done through a bargaining forum between the security employer associations and the different 22 or 23 different unions representing the interests of security officers. I think most of the members may remember that the consensus and agreement was reached in the bargaining forum at the beginning of this year on a statutory minimum wage increase in conditions of employment for the private security industry for the next 3 years. That current agreement is with the Minister of Labour. We're actually expecting legislation published by Friday for implementation in the first week of September, which then highlights the different minimum conditions of employment, including minimum salaries within the different magisterial districts for the private security guards. As far as security training is concerned, although the Minister of Labour determines the different security or minimum conditions of employment and wages for the security industry, CIRA, on the other hand, determines the level of training for the security industry in order to be registered with the authority. So in a case where a security officer performs the functions of a grade E security officer and gets payment for grade E security officers as determined by the labor legislation, CIRA determines the training standard for a grade E security officer. So you will find in the private security industry, because there's no relation between the two in the end of the day, a security officer may be trained up to a level B security officer, but works as a grade E security officer in terms of labor legislation, then that security officer only needs to be paid grade E wages. It's only when the security officer performs a grade B function as determined in the labor legislation, then the wages must be also equivalent to the grade B as contained in the schedule published by the Minister of Labor. The issue of the 1,000 security guards for special event security as well, that is currently the position on our database. I've made reference to the regulations that were published in 1998 in the board notice, which place a responsibility on any security officer that performs a security-related function at a special event must be registered and be adequately trained in special events. It's a special events curriculum that we compiled in 1998. Now, currently on our database, we've got just over 1,000 security officers that's registered in that specialization. So it's clear that there is a major contravention of our legislation when it comes to sporting events currently in our country. The issue, and generally the chairpersons and honourable members, on the stewards and the security officer in general, our legislation defines what is a security officer. It's a person providing safety and order at any special event. A steward obviously performs that function as well. Our legislation goes further, as I mentioned in board notice published in 1998, explaining what is a special event security officer. And there it refers to a person who, for instance, performs some form of crowd control at a sporting event. Now, if a steward is performing that particular function of a crowd control, they are rendering security service in terms of our legislation, and therefore they need to be registered. We do not have a concern that the bill tries to differentiate between a steward and a security officer. That's terminology for us.
But both must be registered with us. Generally, I think it's accepted that persons inside of the perimeter after the turnstiles are generally stewards, and then persons outside of the perimeter at the turnstiles are usually security officers. If that distinction wants to be made to explain the two different categories, we do not have a concern with that. But what we are saying is both are performing a security function in terms of our act, and therefore they both need to be registered in terms of our legislation. Our training curriculum and our new proposed training curriculum that deals with event security caters for both of those security officers as well. Where the steward will perform specifically crowd control with an event, the competencies is written in such a manner to deal, to equip that security officer or steward with the necessary competence to perform crowd control in case of evacuations and emergency drill and everything related to crowd management. The issue, chairpersons and honourable members, on insurance of workers and whether they are covered. Again, this is the issue that's been dealt with in terms of the labour legislation by the Minister of Labour when they looked at minimum conditions of employment for the security sector. There's specific provisions in the legislation dealing with a statutory provident fund for the private security sector. All security officers, as defined in Sectoral Determination 6, that's the labour legislation that deals with the security industry, is required to contribute to the private security sector provident fund. And as we've seen in the recent agreement signed between the employers and the unions, reference is also made for the Basic Condition Commission of the Minister of Labour to look at a medical fund for the private security industry, or at least some form of a hospital plan for the private security industry. So that is something the Basic Condition Commission will be investigating, and hopefully we will get proper cover for the security industry as well. The issue on why CIRA, if there's any financial benefit for the security industry to register with CIRA, I must say that the security industry currently, and CIRA as a body, is funded by the private security industry. We don't receive any funding from National Treasury at this stage. Although the government views the regulation of the private security industry as key national importance, the decision was taken that the industry itself will fund for its own regulation. So security businesses applying for registration as well as security officers do pay fees towards the authority to be registered, and they also pay monthly fees to CIRA and order, and that fees is then used to regulate the occupational security service provider. So yes, we will receive some financial benefit from all security service providers ensuring they are registered, but it is an obligation in terms of an act. I think the chairperson and honourable members mustn't lose sight of the fact that it's a criminal offence for security service providers not to register with the authority, and it's punishable with up to 5 years imprisonment for a first conviction and up to 10 years imprisonment for a subsequent conviction. So it's a very serious offence for any security service provider to render a security service in this country whilst not registered. In the case where a question was asked as well on the fact if a person has now been convicted of a scheduled offence, this is one of the requirements for registration with CIRA, that a person must meet minimum requirements as set out in Section 23 of our legislation. Besides the fact that a person must be a South African citizen or a permanent resident status, they must be 18 years of age, must be adequately trained, there's a list of scheduled offences in our legislation that refers to criminal offences. If a person has been convicted within a period of 10 years of a scheduled offence, then it's a disqualifiable offence and authority may refuse the registration of that person, so the person will not be able to gain legitimate entry to the private security industry. In a case where a security officer has been registered and has been convicted subsequently of a scheduled offence, then authority go through the procedure through fair and just administrative action to withdraw the registration of that security officer, and therefore they won't be able to legitimately work in the security industry. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. To the DG and the drafters of this bill, I just want to ask from you so that at least these people must live here with their understanding. CIRA is it difficult for you in the Act to include CIRA to be part of the initial planning? Because if they come late and come and disrupt our program, I will not agree on that, and nobody's agree with that. But if you are putting them on the planning committee, is it difficult? Yes, sir.
Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, the bill as currently drafted makes provision for the chair of that Event Safety and Security Planning Committee, which is the senior SAPS official, to second onto that committee any person whom he or she deems fit and they can make a contribution. We'd just like to sound off the department that the thrust of what was presented here today by the Private Security Industry Regulatory Authority in respect of that point is noted and accepted. We believe there may, however, have to be a discussion with regard to a mechanism that will accommodate right up front the involvement of the regulatory authority, bearing in mind that there will be significant numbers of these event safety and security planning committees for medium and high-risk events. And one wonders whether the regulatory authority, in terms of its current human resourcing, would be able to put a member for each of those committees. But the principle on behalf of the department is certainly accepted.
But let us not look at the capacity. Let us look at the principle. Let's set up a principle that it is correct for the police to have somebody participating in the planning. How they do it is not an issue. But it must be part of that, and then they will see how they deal with it. We're only saying if it is not there, you put it there, they will see who is there, seconded, and then in the dissolution of powers by any who's their head. I think let's put it as a principle there, I'm requesting. The other thing that I want to check with Gideon. Gideon, on page 14, on special events venue, is this definition in harmony with the definition on the bill as we speak now? Special events venue. At page 11. If you don't want to answer that, keep it, and then when you come back at 2, give us the yes, Bob. The yes,
I'm not answering that question, Chair. I'm speaking on the issue of the regulator and the event safety planning committee. I think as alluded to by Mr. Mthi, the regulator would need to consider if it wouldn't compromise their regulatory role to be part of that committee. They need to seriously sit down and consider that issue, because we believe it might have implications for their independence and for their role. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. There's another advice.
Yes, Honourable Chairman, I think we do not have access to the presentation at this moment, so we do not have access to the definition you are referring to.
Oh.
So if it's possible that we can just confer over lunch.
Okay, but just note, and then if you don't have that document, and then the secretary will give you the document. I don't know how it is, because other people are having it. And then he will give you that document. And then you check on page 11, that definition. But on page 12, I think you're right. The committee has raised this matter page 12 in training and all persons providing the following categories of special. We've raised this matter, if you can recall, as if we knew that is going to come up. I think we must check it and then also settle that answer. The question of vetting of those people is another thing that we remember we asked you about. And then I think now in the working relationship with Sarah will give you, because I have raised the Bloemfontein matter to you, and then there it is now. The other thing I want to ask about, I see here on page 13 you say car gas. Are you saying all these people that were giving them 10 cents and 10 rand there, you don't know who are those people, because they're all over the country.
Thanks, Jay. Yes, there's a car guard industry. You get a formal and a very informal car guard sector. Some of it is well organized, some is very informal. But our definition of security service says that any person who safeguards or protects or safeguards persons or property for remuneration, reward, a benefit, or a fee are rendering a security service. So if they look after your vehicle and they receive some form of a benefit or a fee from the person whose vehicle they're looking after, there's a requirement that there are actors they need to register. They fall within the definition of a security service provider.
I've just discussed with the co-chair. I said, co-chair, abantu besira have to run and sweat because there are things that are not right there. And then unfortunately, she's agreeing with me. If it goes to an extent that you can walk outside Parliament here and go down there, you will see those people existing. And then you can't say you only going to respond when probably somebody has put a complaint and all that. And these things need to be regulated, because there is a law that says they need to be regulated. But it gives a worry on the oversight on this thing. And then, but to have agreed, she's got a way of handling this thing so that you must assist her in dealing with it. The last input, although Gideon, we don't have that, the last input is on page 19, Gideon. You remember the issue of the steward. Can you and Sira have an understanding on the definition of a steward and the LOC? Because in three of you have a different way of what the steward is. But we want you to have an agreement. But you don't have an agreement of a definition that suits you. You have an agreement on a definition by the law, an existing law. So if a steward is somebody who shows you where to sit and all that, and somebody has a different view on the steward, and what is presently existing is a law definition of what the steward is, and then just discuss that. And then, but I'm just saying to you, there's one road, the one defined by the Act of what the steward is. It can't be the other way around. And also on page 20, there is an insertion of the Provincial Health Department and a representative, or the one that we said you must check. But I think the point of conflict of interest, and at times it will not give you a proper oversight work, because you are part of those who say that, no, we have decided with you in the meeting. Why now you come and tell us this thing when you are part of that kind of a decision? So just tread a little bit careful on that and check whether is it necessary an earthquake or train smash if you don't become part of that planning committee, but sensitize the planning committee of the things that they need to do. But consider what the advocate there is putting forward. I think the last thing that I want to put to the CIRA, on page 23, CIRA, different portfolios under one legislation. I don't understand the portfolios. Are you saying different portfolio committees on or portfolios of the two departments? Okay. You're talking about?
We made reference to the Minister of Police as well as the Minister of Sport and Recreation.
Yes.
And in one legislation and accountability as far as that.
Why is it a challenge?
Mr. Chair, I think, you know, we don't really necessarily want to pursue the point, but we are, in our own experience, in terms of, for instance, our Levies Act, we've got the Minister of Finance as well as the Minister of Police responsible for the implementation of that particular legislation, which created quite, considerable complications in moving that legislation forward in terms of who's responsible for what and who's going to take accountability for what specific issues. So I think it's more just a question of caution. when it refers to the different portfolios as far as accountability is concerned. I don't know if my colleagues want to add anything on that particular point.
No, you see, when you raise it as a challenge, the police committee is here. Then you just say it's a challenge in this way because of the reason, so that when they leave here, they will be having that idea that no, in the implementation or on accountability, this is creating a bit of a problem and see how to be finished. Because one thing that is happening that you see today is that Parliament and government encourages the cluster type of approach. But when I'm a chair of sport, I must understand the role of the police in the event and the role of the security at the event. It must not be a domain of somebody. At the same time, the police must understand when they've gone to the venues where the games are played, and then it can't be a domain of sport alone. So that is a kind of an approach that is encouraged, working together and in clusters, so that people must have an understanding, because when you are in the street today, they don't say you don't work in a police portfolio committee. They ask you, and say that, look at the police at the Shebeen with a car, and you're a member of parliament. They don't care of all this, but it's better when everybody is almost exposed to the workings and the understandings of others. So I don't think it's a real challenge, but in a way we put it, and then can create a problem. Legislation should not create an impression that a new authority is created to regulate a specific category of security service provider. I want to understand, what does this mean?
Thank you, Chair. We basically make reference to the issue of the steward in particular, and the differentiation between the steward and security. We don't want the legislation to create the impression that stewards are regulated by the sport or by the bill, and you know the security industry is regulated by the Private Security Industry Regulation Act. It comes back to the debate on whether a steward is in fact a security officer and vice versa.
So as soon as there is a common understanding there on the steward, it means it will not be a challenge. Okay, fine. Thank you, Chair.
Do you want to say anything?
Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity. I think the technical advisor will probably have more to say than I do. From the police side, it is just really important for us to distinguish exactly who is classified as a steward and who is a private security officer, simply because you have organizers who call these service providers by a variety of names, which causes problems in the sense that some of them are classified as volunteers and then they actually render security services. So from our perspective, it's just necessary that the whole steward and security officer issue be very clearly distinguished so that there's no gray area in between.
Chief, I maybe just add on that. I think the terminology of steward actually originated from the UK, where stewards need to register with the Football Licensing Authority in the United Kingdom. But there's a similar regulatory authority for the security industry in the UK, which refers to the Security Industry Authority. And in terms of their legislation, there's also a requirement for stewards to register with the Security Industry Authority in the UK. But what they have done is, because there's a Football Licensing Authority that basically governs also safety issues at special events, they obtained an exemption from the portfolio responsible for security industry authority that stewards only need to register with the Football Licensing Authority. Now, we don't have a Football Licensing Authority in this country, so the requirements still remain the same. Stewards, even in their legislation, are considered to be a security service provider, but they only receive the exemption because of the requirement to register with FLA. But in our Act, because our Act governs the occupational security service provider and stewards fall within that definition, there will still be a requirement for them to register with us. That is our view on this issue.
Let me complicate this to you. Let me just complicate this. This Act, this bill says, as soon as it's enacted, supersede any other definition. So you creating any, to me, you're opening up yourself, because we will put a definition probably suit by sport, and therefore the bill says as soon as we make that definition, it supersedes any other definition that is relevant to sports and recreation.
Mr. Chair, if you can allow me, the importance for us is to ensure that stewards are screened and meet requirements for registration. I think that's in the interest of any event organizer, that they do not take any person from the street to perform the functions of a steward. Our act will allow for the authority from outside body to screen that particular applicant to see whether they meet certain requirements for the registration, including a specific training standard that's developed specifically for event security officers or event stewards, as we refer to. So I think there's considerable benefits for stewards to register with the private security industry regulatory authority from a curriculum perspective as well as a general oversight perspective.
And can this be for the last time that you respond without me pointing at you?
My apologies, Chairperson.
No, Chairperson, I wanted to say, I think what we were saying probably was the right thing. The people are responsible for this act, and we must do both acts. In this country, you don't make a law which you have to make sure that is why his first point, I agree with the chairperson of the portfolio committee, does not make, there's no law in this country that is governed only by one portfolio. They are always, if you look at the Criminal Procedure Act, it's governed by justice, but it's also governed by their events that's governed by police and so on. But this one, there must be some exchange of ideas so that they find a common ground. You can't have one thing. You were right when you said it must be divided in terms of the law and only one law. It can't be one law defines it. When you talk about a person in this country or a legal person, you don't say no in this act to define. There must be one definition. Otherwise, you're going to find yourselves in all unnecessary problems. I thought you were ruling shepherds in a portfolio sport. Let them find each other and find a way of making sure that this steward is defined in a manner which everybody agrees so that there's no confusion.
I think that assists. Yes.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. Firstly, from the department's perspective, we want to thank the Private Security Industry Regulatory Authority for having applied their minds on the current bill that's before Parliament and raising some issues, that some of which had already been grappled with by the Portfolio Committee. The one issue, look, we've got to be honest with ourselves. The reason that the issue of steward and security officer has come up is that there's been a blurring of the line of what a steward and security officer is on occasion by event organizers, so they want to deploy people who are not registered as security officers to provide a security service. I think that's the first aspect. The second aspect is that there was a reference by the senior representative to the United Kingdom legislation, which we have taken a lot of trouble to research. And I think the important distinction is the term steward has been introduced into South Africa. It needs to be accommodated in this legislation. But we've got to distinguish. A steward in the UK environment provides a safety function. That's why they have to be registered with the Football Licensing Authority. But in the United Kingdom, they also have a Private Security Industry Regulatory Authority. Okay? And the security officers that work at the UK football grounds have to be registered with that. So the question is quite a simple one. We have existing legislation. That existing legislation, the Private Security Industry Regulation Act, is referred to in our definitions clause. Security officer, security service provider, all of the terminology that the committee had put in place, the Portfolio Committee for Safety and Security in 2001. So if a person provides a security service as defined by the serial legislation, they must be registered. If in terms of our legislation, the state law advisor has made a comment with regard to safety functions. Now, there's no word control in the what the state law advisor has advised, because we were acutely aware I was part of the team that assisted with the drafting of the Private Security Industry Regulation Act originally. So we are very mindful of that distinction and to ensure that our public isn't exposed to unregistered persons. Just on that point, but the chairperson's committee of the Safety and Security Committee is quite correct, and the sports committee, we will ensure that CIRA are happy, obviously, and we'll have that those discussions with regard to that. There's no new authority being established. It's quite clear with the cross-references to the legislation, which I've referred to, is that we recognize the authority and its important role in terms of existing law. But it's important, the point that they made, is that we need to have a mechanism that ensures that they do play a role in that Event Safety and Security Planning Committee. And whether it's the provision of information at an early stage or whatever that might be, we agree with that submission that was made. As far as the definition of special events, I've looked at that definition now, and we are satisfied that there's a use of different wording, but the thrust of the definition is the same. It talks about sporting, recreational, and other events. So we're quite satisfied that it's the same thing.
Yeah, I think we are done, and I think I want to thank you for your submission. We will take note of it where we can accommodate you with. We are attending this meeting for the first time as the Portfolio Committee on Police. So yes, we'll still be looking to many other things. Surely we will meet with you in our meetings. Thank you very much for the presentation. I think after this we'll break for lunch, if it is available already, is it? Okay. Our restaurants are under renovation, so we'll not be able to go to any. We will just have our lunch outside here. I've not smelt anything, so I'm not sure whether it's here now. But it is time that we break for lunch. Then we'll meet here at 2 o'clock. 2, Premier Soccer League will start talking, whether we are here or not. So please connect your phone.